Welcome to Tosfos Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Basra Daf Chof Beis. Today's shiur will begin in Mirz Hashem, 11 lines from the top. Before we begin the actual Gemara, and your eye probably spotted on the Mark Dapim a crown shape. On the side, we have a Mivneh structural note which reads Maisim Shel Seicharim. We'll have incidents, stories involving merchants Shebo Mi Bachutz that came from outside. Or in accordance with our previous sukkah, our previous year, the issue of outsiders coming into a locale, people coming from a different town into this town to do business, the issue of competition or unacceptable competition. In this case, we have merchants coming from outside, kedei lischor kan, in order to do business over here, dover shebederach klal oser, something that in general is not permitted. We'll see a double underline marking, which highlights Osu b'nei masa komakfi olayu. The townspeople came and raised their objection to these outsiders. That you'll see in the first two incidents. Now the Gemara, as we say, 11 lines from the top. Hano dikuloi. Dikuloi are people that sell baskets. The aisu dikloi lebovel. They came and brought their. They brought their wares. They brought their baskets to Bovel. Also, b'nei maso, the townspeople came, and the koma akfil aluyahu. They came and raised their objection to these outsiders coming with their baskets. Also, l'kamei d'Ravina. They came to Ravina. Amar lahu. Ravina said to them, "Me alma also ula alma lizbenu." They came from outside. They'll sell their baskets to outsiders. We take a look in the Rashi on the upper part of the narrow lines, La'almo Lizvenu, or Lizvenon, Yoma Deshukahave. That's a significant point. It was market day. The Harbe Boyin Mimokamak Achirliknois Minashuk. Many outsiders come from their respective locations to buy here in the market. Lefikoch Ein B'nei Ma'akfin Gam Al Hamoichim. Since it's shuk time and outsiders are coming into town, it's not within the power of the townspeople to object to the outsider vendors selling to outsider customers. We continue in the Gemara. Vahani mili biyoma deshuka. This permission is only if it's, as we just noted in the Rashi, on market day. If it's not market day, so these outsiders cannot come to town to sell. Even if, let's say, their intention is to sell to outsiders that happen to be in that town, but it's not market day. And even on market day, there's a qualification. Only the only license they have is to sell in the market itself. Avladuri b'masalo, but to seek out customers in town, to go into various local streets, alleyways, to knock on doors, that would not be allowed. Even if they're searching on market day for outsiders that happen to be in town, not allowed, unless the sale is taking place in the shuk itself. Hano ermaroi are sellers of wool. In this word, armo roy, the root ayin mem resh, the ayin, if you interchange it with a tzadi, you get the word semer, which is wool. So you have wool salesmen, daisu ermro lefumnara, they brought their wool to this location called Pumnara. Asu b'nei maso kamakfi alayo, the townsfolk came and said, we don't want you selling here. Asu l'kamei d'Rav Kahana. They came to Rav Kahana, Omar Lahu, Dinohu de Matfi Alaihu. Rav Kahana said to these vendors, they are allowed by the law to prevent you from sales. Omru Lay, so the vendors said, we're not here out of the blue. Rather, we're here in this town because Islon Ashroi Bemaso. We have Ashroi, that's debts to collect. We sold merchandise on credit, and we're in town in order to collect the debts that are due to us. And if we don't sell our wares, with what will we be able to live? In other words, we need money to live on, and that's why we're trying to sell our wool during our stay here, which is for the purpose of collecting debts. Omar Lahu, so Rav Kahana said to them, Zilu Zavnu Shior Chi Yusaihu Ad De Akrisu Ashroi Didchu Viazlisu. So you have permission, go and sell your wool to the amount that is necessary for your sustenance until you collect your debts, and then leave town. You'll notice now we have another Maisa, and we have a long marking. It takes us down till the Mishnah, three lines from the bottom. This is a long incident. Ravdimi minahardo icy grogros bisfino. Ravdimi came with dry figs on a boat. Came to town from outside. Came to a town to sell dry figs. Amale reish gelusa larava. Poke chazi, go and see. The reish gelusa, the exilarch, says to Rava, go and see e sumra bonan hu, if this man is a Talmud Chacham. Nokit le shuka will make an announcement that no one shall sell grogros other than him. You know, he'll get the preferential treatment because he's a Talmud Chacham. He'll receive that preferential treatment. Amar le Rava, Rav Ado Barabo. Now, Rava was the one who was instructed to check out Rav Dimi, who was obviously, you can see, was not. Visually was not familiar to them. They didn't know who he was. But in the event that he's a Talmud Chacham, we'll make that allowance. Rava was asked to check him out, and Rava now transfers his instructions to Rav Ado Bar Abba. And Rava says, Poke tohi le bekan kane. That's an expression, won't translate it literally, but it means go test him out. Nofak ozal. So Rav Ado went, and Bo Mine, he met up with Ravdimi, and he asked Ravdimi a question. He posed a question called a test question. And the following is the case. It's in the realm of Tumas Kalim. Peel, an elephant, Shebola Kfifo Mitzris, who swallowed a... Now, this is going to be a discussion in the Tosis later on, but first we'll translate it literally, with the disclaimer that the literal translation is not going to be the pshat that Tosfos says at the end, but the elephant swallowed a kfifos, a basket. Mitzris means reeds, a reed basket. V'kiyo derech beisuri, and in the animal's elimination of waste, the basket came out whole. Mahu, what is the din? Is this considered a part of the animal's digested food that comes out as waste? And if you would view it as that, as the word that you see in Rashi is merukal, is digested, if it's, even though it's coming out full, would you consider it digested? And if you would, it would be considered kli glolim. Kli glolim means vessels made from dung. Dung vessels. Dung vessels, if a person crafts, fashions vessels from dung, it is impervious to defilement. It would not mekabel tumah. If, however, you say not so, it's not considered digested food. So it came in as a basket. It now leaves as a basket. It's a basket, and it's a kli, it's a vessel, and it could mekabel tuma. Lo hava biyodei. Rav Dimi did not have an answer. Omar le, Rav Dimi, looking at the man in front of him, and happened to be Vada Baba, he says, Mar nihu Rava, are you Rava? Apparently, Rav Dimi knew that in this town, Rava lived. So are you Rava? Rava was known as an Odom Godel, and maybe you're him. Tofachle besandale. So Ravada, he knocked on his shoe with his stick, which is a type of reaction, a jestful reaction to someone that's not of importance. Omar Le, and so Ravada said, Bein didi le Rava ikatuva, between the distance between myself and Rava is great. In other words, he's much greater than I am. Miu al korchoch, however, by force of circumstance, ano raboch, I am the equivalent of your teacher. V'rova rabo de raboch, and Rava is the teacher of your teacher. Well, he didn't pass the test. Lo noktu le shuka, they didn't restrict or restrain the market from its sales of dried figs, of grogros. Pos grogros didei, and Ravdimi's grogros were a loss. He had a lot of merchandise and didn't, and the local competition sold their wares, and his went bad. He lost. Also, the Kamei Rav Yosef Ravdimi came with his complaint. Amalei Chazimor my Avduli. Ravdimi says, "Look at what they've done to me." He had anticipated that he would have the benefit of the market available to him, and because he didn't answer the question, he lost out, and he's complaining. Omar Le, Rav Yosef said, "Man de lo shaye oilo oinisa demalka de edom lo nishaye lo nisech." The one, a reference to the Almighty, who did not delay the retribution on behalf of the king of Edom, he will not delay the punishment for your pain. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "Ko amar Hashem al shlosha pishe moyov, the al arbo lo ashivenu al sorfo atzmos melech Edom masid." Without translating the pasuk literally, the Almighty says that declares that the king of Moab burnt the bones of the king of Edom, causing great disgrace, and for that he will not remain silent. Well, we'll call it a type of curse was vocalized. Noch nafshei Ravada bar Abba, and Ravada died. Now notice in your marked Gemaras a series of triangles. Under our Mivneh heading, the triangle appears with a dash underline, which also appears in our Gemaras, highlighting the expression Ano Anishte. I am the one who is responsible for Rav Ado's death. Kol Echad, each one of the names that you will see, you have Rav Yosef, Rav Dimi, Abaye, Rava, and Rav Nachman Yitzchok, each one of these claims that he's the one responsible for the death of Rav Ado bar Abba. How is each one responsible? So I think that the Rav Yosef claim is the most obvious, but doesn't mean that that's necessarily going to be the one that the Gemara concludes with. Tosfos addresses the question, why does each one react this way? Why is each one taking the blame, so to speak, for Ravada's death? Well, wait for the Tosfos explanation later on. But Rav Yosef says, Rav Yosef Omar, Ano Anishtei, I bear responsibility for his punishment, for Ravada's punishment, for Ravada's death. Why? Dano la Taisei, I am the one that issued the curse. Ravdimi minardo Omar Ano Anishte. Ravdimi says, I'm responsible for his death because the afsid grogros didi. It was Rav Ado had caused my loss, my financial loss of the grogros, and because of my loss, so he was punished. Abaye Omar Ano Anishte. Abaye, who we didn't see in this picture at all, it's true that Abaye is a colleague of Rava, who was part of the story, But Abaye claims I'm responsible. The Omar Lahu Lerabonon, Rav Ado Bar Abba, who was the one that died over here, he used to say to the Rabbonon, Ademagramisu Garmi Be Abaye Su Achlu Bisra Shmeino Be Rava. Kind of, well, first to give a type of literal translation to that, is instead of, or while you're grinding bones in the yeshiva of Abaye, come and eat rich or fatty meat by the yeshiva of Rava. So Rav Ada, who you can see was associated with Rava, used to try to convince, persuade students of Abaye to leave Abaye and come to learn by Rava, on the grounds that the study by Abaye is the equivalent of churning bones, and the study by Rava is the equivalent of eating rich meat. How do we translate that into more, let's say, realistic terms? So we look in the Rabbeinu Gershom commentary, and we'll read the section relevant to this. More or less across from here, in the Rabbeinu Gershom, Ademagramisu Garmi Be'abai Shoya Rogil Loimul Talmidei Abai. This Rav Ada was accustomed to addressing the students of Abai, calls Man Shatem Me Gardin Atzomois Shemben Lichluach Be'abai. While you're spending time grinding upon bones that have no freshness to them, no dampness to them, dry bones, you can learn Torah in a straight and halachic fashion, reaching conclusions in the yeshiva of Rava. Abaye didn't teach so much. Abaye took responsibility for Rav Ada's death, saying that as a result of my being the subject of Rav Ada's deprecation, so Rav Ada suffered his fate. We continue in the Gemara. V'rova Omar Ano Anishte. Rava tells us the following story. He says, why am I responsible? Because when he, Rav Ada, went to the butcher shop to acquire a piece of meat, Omar Lu Letapchi, Rav Ada would tell the butcher, Ano Shakil no Bisra Mekami Shami de Rava Dano Adif Nomine. Just to try to imagine where there was a line of customers, or in this case even just himself and Rava's servant. That's Shamei, is the Shamish of Rava. He, Rav Ada, would insist on receiving first treatment, first attention, ahead of Rava's servant, on the grounds that I am greater than him. I am greater than Rava's servant. So serve me first. That's as far as the translation goes. I think that little interchange has to be analyzed a bit further. Was the Shamish, was he sent there to buy meat for Rava? And if that were the case, then this is quite interesting. Raises the question of why would he, Rav Ada, insist on going in front of the Shamish of Rava, unless you explain that the Shamish of Rava was there to buy meat for himself. We continue in the Gemara. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Omar Ano Anishte. And you notice we have a long marking, because this is all one point with Rav Nachman's explanation. I am responsible for Rav Ada's fate. How is that? The Rav Nachman Yitzchok Reish Kalahavan. Rav Nachman was the rabbi charged with public lectures on Shabbos. Kala is an expression you find in different places having reference to different type of Torah lectures. Rashi, in this particular case, says that he gave the weekly public Torah address. That was Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok's one of his roles. Kol yoma mekami dinei lekala. Every day, every Shabbos, we'll say that before he would go into the public, to go in to where the he would issue his public address, he would review the contents of his lecture. Marhit Bahadei Rav Ado Bar Abba Lishmaitse Father Ayo Lakala. He would review it. Marhit means to run through the material together with Rav Ado Bar Abba. Rav Ado Bar Abba would be the sounding board for Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. And after that, then Rav Nachman would address the public. Hahu Yoma, on that day, the day that Rav Ado Bar Abba died, on that day, Noktua Rav Papa Ravun Rav Yeshua Lomar Bar Abba Mishum Delo Havu B'Siyuma. These two rabbis, Rav Papa and Ravun Rav Yeshua, they delayed Rav Ado Bar Abba from going to Rav Abba Yitzchak. Why did they delay Rav Ado? Because they, Rav Papa and Rav Huna, were not at the Siyum, at the end of the Shiur given by Rava, called the Talmudic lecture given by Rava. They weren't at the end, and they wanted to hear from Rav Ado. Amrule Eimolon, they said to Rav Ado, tell us, Hani Shmaitzo de Maisir Behema, Heichi Amrisu Rava. What were the laws, the teachings? What was the Torah that Rava said concerning the topic of Maiser Behema? Omar Lahu, Hachi Omar Rava, Vachi Omar Rava, and Rav Ado cooperated with them and told them what Rava said. Rava said this, Rava said that. Adachi Nogale, Rav Nachmitz, in the meantime, he, Rav Ado, was delayed in reaching Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. There was an assumed time that the public gathered to hear Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's Shabbos drasha, and it was getting late. And as a result of this delay, Rav Nachman did not review his lecture with Rav Ado. Review that which he would say to the public. Omule Rabbanon Rav Nachman Yitzchak. The Rabbanon said to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, "Kum, get up. The Nogolan, it's getting late. Loma Yosef Mar, why are you sitting?" Omar Lahu Yasivna, I'm seated here. Vika Natarna Laarse de Rav Ado Bar Abba. I'm sitting waiting for the Arse is a bed, or it's a stretcher on which the deceased is placed before his burial. So I'm waiting for his I'm waiting for his coffin because I am of the belief that he died. Adohachi nofa kolu de nochnafshe de Ravado bar Abba. And in the meantime, an announcement was heard that in fact Rav Ado Bar Abba died. And now, in view of all the opinions that we saw till now, the Gemara says umistabra the Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Anshe, and it's most likely that he is the one, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is the one that's responsible for Rav Ado's death. We now turn to the Tosfos that are relevant to this piece of Gemara. Of course, as usual, we're looking at our Tosfos page. Me Alma Asu Ula Alma Lizvan. This is the Tosfos relevant to the Gemara, 14 lines from the top, where the salesman, in this case it was the basket salesman, had come from outside town, and Ravina said to them that you come from the outside and you will sell to those that are in town from outside. And we pointed out that was on market day. So Tosfos points out, Me'alma osu lama lizvan mikan mashma de beyoima de shuka From here, one could conclude that on market day, Hayamutir lahalvois livnei adam haboyim mimakoymois sham lashuk lenochrim di asu me'alma. It would be mutter to loan money to goyim, to idol worshippers. And when we speak about extending loans to idol worshippers, we're talking about interest bearing loans. And the heter to loan, to extend interest bearing loans, which is a source of profit, is extended to those people that came from outside to a particular town on market day, and on that market day there were idol worshippers, and it would be mutter for, as just to repeat, Jewish outsiders who come to town on market day to extend interest-bearing loans to idol worshippers that have come to town from outside. Avol livnei hamokum lo. I believe that bnei hamokum is a reference to idol worshippers that live in that town. These outsiders, these Jews coming from the outside with money, would not be allowed to loan, extend interest-bearing loans to nochrim that are residents of that town. V'dafke v'shuka, and this allowance is only in the marketplace. Avaladuri lo, but to seek them out in other parts of the city, that would not be allowed. The next Tosfos is a reference to the Gemara in the middle of the Omid, where Rava, after Ravini comes to town with his grogros, Omar le Rava le Rav Ado bar Abba. So the Tosfos Dibra Maso Omar le Rava Rav Ado bar Abba. We've dashed underline the words bar Abba. Kain Goris Rabbeinu Chananel. It's to keep things accurate. You should maintain this girsa by way of name, that Rav Ado, the son of Abba. That's Rabbeinu Chananel's girsa. V'lo garsino bar Abba. Don't have as a girsa Rav Ado bar Ahava, another relatively well-known Amoraic personality. That would be a mistake to have in this Gemara. The Oisoi Hoya Bimei Rebbe. Rav Ado bar Abba lived at the time of Rebbe, and it was couple generations earlier. Kinamino Bekidushin, as it's proven, as it says, states in Masechet Kiddushin, Hayom, Hayom is a reference to the day that Rebbe died, Yoshev Rav Ado bar Abba, Becheker Shel Avraham Avinu. There are different explanations of what Becheker Shel Avraham Avinu means. One of the explanations is it's the day that Rebbe died, Rav Ado had his circumcision done. He was a baby at that point. But he lived at the time of Rebbe, and not at the time of Rava, so Rava couldn't have been addressing him. Therefore, it's more accurate to have as a girsa, Rav Ado bar Abba. We continue with the next tesis, Dibur Maschil Peel. A reference to the Gemara, 27 lines from the top. This was the test question put to Rav Dimi, Pil Shebola Kvifo Mitzris. On the side, we have a taksir, summation of this Tosfos. And what have we written? The following. Tosfos Masbir, Tosfos explains, She'ein Lefare She'lis Rav Adol, Rav Dimi, do not explain the question as we did in our literal translation, Pil Shibola Kvifo Mitzris Mahu, what is the din, Kipshuto. Don't explain the question in its simple literal fashion. Why not? Dahat Shuva Lazeb Shita Mishnah Mefureshes. The answer to that question, namely, an elephant that swallows a complete basket and in its elimination it comes out whole. What is the din regarding Tumah? The answer to that is in an explicit Mishnah. That wouldn't be a test question to put to a scholar. A scholar in the time of the Gemara would have known the answer, you know, off the top of his head. Namely, the Mishnayos were very clear to them. Ela Hashela Hoysa, the question rather was Peel Shibolat Hutzin Vihikion Derech Beis Horei. The elephant swallowed the Hutzin are the reeds from the reed slats from which you would fashion a basket. So the Hutzin are called the raw material for making reed baskets. An elephant swallowed the reeds, and they came derech bezeri, and they emerged in the animal's elimination. Umehem yotzar kfifa, and from them, these reeds that had passed through the elephant's digestive system and came out as same state as they went in. Hayin dino kekli glolim olo. If a basket is fashioned from those reeds, is the basket categorized as a kli glolim or not? Now the Tosfos. Peel shibola kfifa mitzvus. Perek Rabbi Shmuel in Perek Rabbi Shmuel, which is a perek in Maseches Menachos, Esau lehach baya dehacha. The question that we have raised here is found over there. Umasikosam, and the Gemara in responding to the question concludes, lemai. If you're asking about a basket that was swallowed whole by an elephant and came out whole, what are you asking the question for? E lemiftal tumaso, if the question concerns a basket that had been defiled, and now you're interested in knowing that as a result of its passage through the animal, through the elephant's digestive system and emerging in its elimination, would that purify it from its initial defilement? Is that your question? Well, Tanina, the answer to that is in a Mishnah. Kol hakelim yordim lidei tumah b'machshava v'ein oilin b'ing tumah elo b'shinui maiseh. There's a well-known rule concerning all vessels, that vessels can achieve tumah capacity through thought, through intent. However, they don't leave that state. Ein oilin b'ing tumah. They don't leave that state of tumah unless the vessel goes through a shinui maisa, through a physical change in the vessel itself. Going through the animal's digestive system does not constitute a shinui maisa, so that wouldn't result in the change of the vessel's status. V'ko'omar, and there the Gemara in Menachos says lo tzricha. Now the question concerning the elephant and its swallowing something doesn't concern that. That is, we just said, is obvious from an explicit Mishnah. So what is a question? So what lo tzricha means that's not the rule. So what needs to be asked? The bola hutzin, the elephant swallowed hutzin, the avdinu kvifun, from the hutzin that emerged in the elephant's waste, the person made a basket. Ihavi erikol, does that constitute a digestion? It went through the digestive tract, but in halachic terms, is that considered digested material? V'havei kekli glolim olo. If it's considered equal, so then the reeds would be considered like dung, and the basket fashioned from them is like a vessel made of glolim, and it would not be subject to defilement. Oh, low, or maybe not. We don't view it as if it's been through equal. V'hocha, And here in our Gemara with the story involving Rav Dimi Narda and Rav Ada Barava, here, Bala Hutzin Ba Mine, that was the question that was put to Rav Dimi. The Kfifa Shlemo Amailo Hava Biyode Masnisini, if the question had been like we explained initially in our literal translation, namely, if the question had been an elephant swallowing a complete basket, why would it have said in the Gemara Lo Hava Biyode? He didn't have an answer. Why would? What do you mean he didn't have an answer? Mishnah Masnisin, it's an explicit Mishnah, and that was elementary knowledge for Amoraim in the Gemara. He would have known that I would be so obvious. V'kashila Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, in understanding all of this, like we presented things, in Cain, he Amai lo nikitu le shuka. Why didn't he, Rav Dimi, not receive the benefit of the shuk being held up for him? After all, this is a question that over there in Maseches Menachos remains unresolved. It's an unresolved issue. So he didn't know the answer to a question, to an issue that remains unresolved. Shouldn't he have benefited from the market being restrained till he sold his grogros? And, or in common parlance, we could say, why did he have to pay the price for his not knowing an answer to a question that never received an answer anyway? The yesh lomar, we answer, the mikol mokaim have le la suye hanach rayas de maisi hosom vidochi lahu. The claim against Rav Dimi, so to speak, is that he should have at least attempted to offer proofs, we'll say attempted answers that appear in Maseches Menachos, albeit those proofs are rejected. But he should have made an attempt. Not just remained silent as it appears in our Gemara, where it just simply says Lo Hava Biyode. He didn't have an answer. It seems that he remained silent, didn't even attempt to answer it, and for that he lost the benefit of having the shuk withheld for him. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibur Hamasel Ano. This refers to the Gemara 19 lines from the bottom. Ano anishte, we saw a list of triangles. Each one of the personalities featured in the Gemara was taking responsibility for Rav Ada's death. Kol echad mehen hoyemis einen. Each one of them was bemoaning, shal yodoi meis Rav Ada, that through him Rav Ada suffered his death. We say misoinen means they were bemoaning. They were feeling a sense of despair that maybe they were the ones responsible. Well, why should they feel that sense? Mishum diamrinan b'Shabbos perek shoyel, because in Maseches Shabbos in perek shoyel it says kol mi shechaveru nena shayodoi, anyone through whom someone receives a punishment. Ein machnisin oisei b'mechitzasa shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is a very, very high standard. But what is being said here is that anyone through whom someone else receives a punishment, so that individual, the one through whom the other fellow received the punishment, that individual, we'll say the catalyst individual, is not going to merit being in the precinct, within the confines of the Almighty in the next world. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Gam onoish latzadik loy toiv elara. Onoish latzadik means for a righteous person being responsible for someone else being punished. It's not good. It's not good for the tzaddik. It's bad. The pasuk says, "Gam onosh letzaddik lo tov." It's not good. Rather, it's bad. Uksiv, and it says in another pasuk, "Lo yogur cho ra." There shall that which is ra, that which is bad, shall not dwell with you, Almighty. So they felt that if they're responsible in this, we saw how in some of these examples were very indirect. Abaye, in taking responsibility, he had no contact with Rav Ada per se. You saw that Rav Ada insulted Abaye, but nevertheless, since through that Rav Ada experienced his fate, Abaye feels responsible. And as we saw in the Tosis, why it's only fitting that each one would bemoan that possibility. At this point, we turn back to the Mishnah. And we're looking at, of course, at the bottom of Chof Beis Omen Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Misha haya koisloi somuch lekoisel chaveroi, lo yismuch lekoisel acher limkein yurchik mimenu arba amos." This Mishnah will best be understood by the opening kasha of the Gemara. I can offer a literal translation, but you'll see when we get to the Gemara how it's not very revealing, the literal translation. But the Mishnah says that someone who had a wall next to his friend, he should not place another wall unless he maintains a distance from the neighbor's wall of 4 amos. The Mishnah goes on to say, "Hachaloinos." And by the way, you should have the Pirush Chai, the Book of Illustrations, available. In our Shiurim, we rely heavily upon that Sefer for understanding these, physical related Gemaras. Physical meaning in the sense that you're dealing with structures and a physical reality. Chalonos has to do with, it means windows, so that if someone is, let us say, constructing a wall near someone's windows, he must maintain a distance. We'll see a reference to a vertical distance and a lateral distance. And that's what the Mishnah says, Bein milamalon, bein milamaton. And if you look in the Rashi, Bein milamalon, if he is going to make a wall that's going to be tall, meaning above the neighbor's windows, you must raise the wall to a minimum of 4 amos above the neighbor's windows. If you're going to be building a wall that's low, namely it's below the neighbor's windows, then make sure that it's a minimum of 4 amos below the neighbor's windows. And Bain Kenegd on the Mishnah says Arba Amos, if you're building a wall opposite your neighbor's windows, his house windows, you must distance the wall 4 Amos. Why these distancings? That is something the Gemara will elaborate on. The Gemara, the Kama Heichi Somech. The Kama means the first one. Now, in order to appreciate what that means in the context of the walls, we'll turn immediately to the Rabbeinu Gershom, the bottom line. Umakshinon, the Kaiso Kama de Nofal, Dehave Meikora. If you look back at the Mishnah, it speaks about someone who had a wall near his friend's wall. Do not, and you have to understand at this point, that wall fell down. So in the scheme of things, there was a neighbor, we can call him Mr. A, had a wall, and Mr. B decided to build a wall next to Mr. A's wall. Mr. B had constructed a wall that, in the Mishnah, that wall fell down. That's Mr. B's wall fell down. That was Mr. B's first wall. That's the word in the Gemara Vekama. That first wall, the Mishnah says, well, when you rebuild it, don't rebuild it within four amos. You get the feeling, though, that the first wall that Mr. B had was within four amos. It fell down, and now Mr. B wants to reconstruct the wall. He has to be careful to maintain a distance of four amos. Don't rebuild it like your first wall was, namely too close. And with that understanding, the Gemara asks, "V'kama echi somech?" The first wall, how was he able to build it? How was he allowed to build it? Some of me next to it, within the four amos. So the Mishnah essentially is describing a scenario where a first wall, in terms of numbers of walls, the second wall in the picture, but it's Mr. B's first wall. How was he allowed to build it so close? Omar Rav Yehuda. Now, to respond to this issue, you have two approaches. You can have first Rav Yehuda, and we highlighted his name with a bow tie, and on the fourth line from the top of Amud Beis, you'll see Rava. So Omar Rav Yehuda, Hachi Ka'omar. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Thusly, you should understand the Mishnah. Habo lismoich lo yismoich elim kein hirchik mimenu arvamos. The Mishnah is telling us when you want to build an initial wall, nothing to do with a wall that fell down, when you want to build an initial wall next to your neighbor's wall, don't build your wall unless you maintain a distance from the neighbor's wall for Amos. Maskiflo Rava objects to this explanation of the Mishnah. The Lashon of Mishnah says, Mi shehoya kaislai samach kaislai chaveru katani. The Mishnah describes a wall that had existed in the past. The Mishnah is not describing an initial building of the wall. The Rabbeinu Gershom has an interesting addition to this, to appreciating what Rava's question is. The Rabbeinu Gershom says at the very beginning of his commentary on the side of the Gemara, Vaha, Misha Kaisa Samu Kaisa Chaver Katani Klomar, Lahaisif Ala Mishna Uletarza At Yochol, Aval Chaser Mimena Mina Ein At Yochol. The explanation of Rav Yehuda was, we'll say, diminishing from the words of the Mishnah. From the Mishnah described a more elaborate situation than what Rav Yehuda is saying. So if you are going to explain a Mishnah by adding words, explanatory words beyond the Mishnah text, that's legitimate. But in fact, throughout the Shas, you find the expression Chisuri Mechasra V'Achi Katani. Mishnayos were authored in a deliberate abbreviated fashion, so that if you're offering an explanation that expands on the words of the Mishnah, that's fine, that's legitimate. But to offer an explanation that reduces from the Mishnah text, that's impossible. So Rava objects to Rav Yehuda's approach, after all, the Mishnah speaks about a neighbor that happened to have had a wall there. Elo, we continue in the Gemara. Elo Amar Rava, Hachi Katani. The following is the understanding of the Mishnah. Mi shahaya koisloi, somuch lukoisu chaveru, berichuk arba amos. Ah, at this point you see that the Mishnah was never describing an initial wall of Mr. B that was too close. Mr. B's initial wall was at the legal minimum distance of 4 amos, and that wall fell down. Lo yismach lo kol selacher elim kein hirchik mimenu dalar amos. When you rebuild the wall, make sure not to rebuild it without maintaining the necessary 4 amos. Now the Gemara is my time, huh? Why is it so important that if you're building a parallel wall to your neighbor, why is it important to maintain this distance? Answer, didavsha dahacha mali lahasam. Davsha, from the word dayish, or dosh, means to trample upon something. We look at Rashi. On the third line from the top, Dav Shadach Amali Lasa Masha Doshin Beregel Bein Shnei Aksolim Tomi. Now, being that there's this, we'll say this path that's formed by the distance maintained between the two walls, so people will walk there between the two walls on a regular basis, and that human passage is beneficial. Moyel Lishnei Aksolim. It's beneficial for the walls, for the foundation of the walls. Lahakshis karkois yisaitis aksum v'lo yimotu. It firms the soil. It firms the earth that's at the base of the walls. So for the benefit of the walls, this distance must be maintained. If you build your wall too close to the neighbor, people won't be able to walk between the walls, and the foundation will not firm up. And eventually the wall will collapse. That's the concept of Davsha. You notice we have a bracketed section. We have a note accompanying this on the side. The start note reads, Achrei Sagraim, Gemara Makshe, Kushios Al Hatam Shel Davsha. After the bracketed section, the Gemara will raise questions on this explanation. In certain cases, you would be allowed to build the parallel wall up close. In other words, without the insistence on maintaining a minimum 4 amma distance. So now that the Gemara structure hopefully is clear, we'll go through the bracketed section. Omar Rav. Lo shanu ela kaisel gina. This requirement of you need to maintain a distance is only if the very first wall that was there was a wall that encloses a gina, a garden. On the garden side, on the inside of that wall, plants are growing. People don't walk over there. The neighbor doesn't walk over there. He, in order to firm up the wall, he'll need people to walk in the area outside of that wall. So if Mr. 2 or Mr. B is going to come and build his wall too close, so the initial wall that encloses a gina is not going to benefit by having a firmed foundation. Avol, kaisel chotzer, if the initial wall, the first guy's wall is a wall surrounding his courtyard, or surrounding a courtyard. Courtyard is a piece of property that people walk on. People walk around in courtyards. So if the initial wall was a courtyard wall, and now the Mr. B is coming to build his parallel wall in Baalismoch Somech. If he wants to build it up close, he can do so. You don't have to worry about the foundation of that initial wall. The firming up of its foundation will be done from the Chotzer side. Rav Shaya Omer, Echad Kaisel Gino, V'Echad Kaisel Chotzer, in Baalismoch Eino Somech. You notice we've used a dot underlining, highlighting Kaisel Chotzer. Here you have, regarding Kaisel Chotzer, you have a machlokes between Rav and Rav Hoshaya. Rabbi Hoshaya says that even in the case of Kaisel Chotzer, you cannot be somech. So we just said it looks like there's a machlokes, but now we have a surprise. Amar Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina v'lo pligi. There's no argument between the two. Ha beir yeshana, ha beir chadasha. If it's a ir yeshana, an old town, people have been living there for a while, then Rav's observation applies. The Kaisel Chotzer has had its foundation firmed up already in the past, but if it's an ir chadasha, a new locale, that is when Rav Oshaya's ruling applies. Rashi, you'll notice on the third narrow line from the top, ir chadasha shadai lo nidosha af Kaisel Chotzer tzricha davsha. It's a newly constructed community, so even if it's a Kaisel Chotzer, it needs the benefit of the davsha, and therefore in that case, don't, even if it's a Kaisel Chotzer, don't build the second wall. Mr. B shall not build his wall up too close. Tanan, here we have a triangle. You can see we have another one a few lines later on the side under the Mivneh, the structural note, Kushios al Davsha Ketan Larchoka. These are questions on the Davsha explanation for the reason for distancing the walls. The Gemara, Tanan. Quote from our mission at the bottom of Omer Aleph, Hachaloinais, Bein Mila Malon, Bein Mila Maton, Bein Mikenegdon, Arba Amois. The distance that you must maintain from the neighbor's windows when you want to build your wall is a distance of 4 amos. The Tani Allah, and in a Brisa, the following is offered as the explanation. Milamalon Kidei Shelo Yatzitz V'Yireh. If you're going to build a wall that's higher than the neighbor's windows, you have to make sure it rises a minimum of 4 amos above his windows. Why? If it's less than that, you as the owner of the wall, and here we're dealing with the I think the concept of what we call a peeping Tom, or someone whose curiosity got the better of him. Nothing new in life. Here you see in the Gemara the fear that if the wall is within here we're dealing with a vertical height. If it's within 4 amos, the owner of the wall could get up onto the top of the wall, bend over, bend downwards, and look into the next guy's windows, violating his privacy. Milamaton. And if you're dealing with a wall that's going to be lower, below the neighbor's windows, it better be far below, 4 amos below. Because if it's within 4 amos, shelo yamoy vira, the owner of the wall can get up on the wall, and a standard person height is assumed to be around 3 amos, and get on his tippy toes and be able to see into his house. And we don't want that. And here is the main point. For us, it would be kenegdon. The lateral distance must be 4 amos, shelo yafil. Because if it's too close, if your parallel wall is within 4 amos, it will cause darkness. So if you have to maintain a minimum of 4 amos, shelo yafil, that you shall, from the word yafil, from the word ofel, which just means darkness, afela. Now the Gemara emphasizes, and we've used a crown marking for emphasis purposes. You'll see how we use it here and in the next question of the Gemara as well. So why taima? Why is the distancing of 4 amos on a lateral basis necessary? Shelo yafil, so that you don't darken his property. Avol mishum davshelo, but because of the davsha consideration, that doesn't seem relevant to the Mishnah and Brisa we just read. So that brings into question the davsha explanation for maintaining the lateral distance. The Gemara answers, Hacha b'may askinan, b'bo min hatzad. We will now see that the Gemara understands the Mishnah in a way that's quite different from the parallel wall model. Hacha b'may askinan, b'bo min hatzad. The Mishnah with the accompanying Brisa is describing a wall that's perpendicular to the house with the windows. Vekama, and if you're dealing with a perpendicular wall, what is the distance? Kidei shelo yafil, that there should be no darkening. Omar Rav Yevo Chamua Da'ashion Bar Nadboch Mishmei Darav. It was said then in the name of Rav. Kemloi Roichav Chaloin. Once again, I can't emphasize enough how important the use of the Pirush Chai book of illustrations is. My words, I don't think, can do sufficient justice to understanding the Gemara, but we're dealing once again with a perpendicular wall. You are expected to move the wall away from the window. That measure or distance that is the equivalent of the window's width. So if you have a window that's 2 feet wide, you would move the perpendicular wall 2 feet away from the window. The Gemara asks, just another point that is explained in Rashi, that what about the necessity of strengthening the foundation? So it's explained that little part of the wall that's up against the house is that little amount that's not going to experience the dafsha is not something of any concern to us. The Gemara asks, Vahalo meitzitz, but if you're going to move the wall away from the window, the perpendicular wall away from the window, that rather small amount, the width of the window distance, is there not the fear that the owner of the wall will just simply go up to the top of the wall and peek into the window? Omar Azvid b'miradeid. There's a previous use of madir, but for our purposes, because you're going to see that word in the Tosfos Dibur Maskil b'madir, but in our reading of the Gemara miradeid, b'miradeid as koisloi. The top of the wall tapers to a point or to an edge. It's not a flat top wall, so that you can't possibly balance yourself on the top of a wall constructed that way. The Gemara asks, V'hanan t'nan arba'amos. We saw that the distance in the case of chalonos is 4 amos, not this rochav chalon idea. Lo kashya. That doesn't pose a difficulty to us. Kan mi ruach achas, kan mi shtei ruchos. We're continuing the perpendicular wall model, and the resolution of these two different shiurim is that if it's meruach achas, meaning there's one perpendicular wall in the picture, so then you distance the wall from the window meloi roichav achalon. If you have mishtei ruchos, those are walls. From there are two perpendicular walls from either side, from both sides, from either side of the window. Rashi across from here says, "Mishtei ruchos shnei ksalim ze keneged ze mishnei tzidei chalon." There are two walls. They're parallel to one another, but they're constructed perpendicular to the house. So, in a case like that. So the distance that must be maintained is 4 amos. The Rabbeinu Gershom explains this piece of Gemara in a rather clear fashion. If we look together in the Rabbeinu Gershom and the wide lines that are under the Tosfos, and we're looking, let's look together in the Rabbeinu Gershom on the fourth line of the wide lines. He says, "Lo kashe kan ruach achas klomar im bono kaisam ruach achas mitzido echad shel chalon einu tzoch laharchik elam loy roichav chalon." As we explained already, v'adik toni masis and dalet amos min atzad, that's nami mairi. The four amma ruling of the Mishnah is also dealing with walls that are min atzad, meaning they're perpendicular to the window. G'gol shebona shnei solim mishnei ruchos shel chalon. There are two walls coming in toward that house on either side of the window. Well, with two parallel walls, so the issue of darkness comes up. And a case like that, so each wall must be kept four amos away from the window. Now we turn back to the Gemara. You'll notice another triangle, Toshma, and right after the Tanaic source that you see in a frame, you'll see the crown marking again, highlighting what the reason for distancing is, and it's not because of Dafsha. So we're going to, it's just maybe before we read the question, just to review the, as far as the superstructure of the Gemara is concerned, if you're dealing with two parallel walls, then they must be distanced four amas from one another for davsha purposes. If you're dealing with the issue of perpendicular walls coming in to the side of a house, that's what we just finished describing in detail. Now we're going back to evaluating the davsha analysis or hesber explanation for the distancing of two parallel walls. Toshma, this is a quote from the upcoming Mishnah. Ves hakesel min amazchela dalet amas, kidei shiei zaykef es hasulam. You must, if you're going to build a wall near someone's house, and the house has a roof, and coming off the roof is a gutter, where the water runs off the roof into the gutter and eventually runs down a drain pipe, a spout. You have to keep the wall four amas away from the neighbor's maschela. That's the gutter running along the edge of the roof. How far must your wall be from the maschela? Dalet amas. Why? Kidei sheizekif es hasulam, that when the house owner wants to clear out debris that may accumulate in the gutter, he will be able to put up a ladder. The ladder obviously has to be secure, so you need a sufficient angle to allow for that, so that the foot of the ladder will be able to set up the ladder at a sufficient slant so that things are secure. So that is achieved by the wall that you're building distanced four amos from the mazchela. Once again, use the Pirush Chai, you can see illustrations of this. So we see this idea of distancing a wall four amos, taimo mishum sulam. The four amo distancing is to enable the ladder to be put up, avo mishum davshalo. The issue of davsha doesn't play a role. The Gemara responds, "Hocha b'may askinon b'maschela mishupas." We're dealing with a maschela. The drain or the gutter is constructed along a roof that tapers over the edge of the house. We look at the Rashi together toward the end of the narrow lines. B'maschela mishupas shetikras Hagag mishupas v'yoytzis lahalin min hakeisel l'soichachotzer. The roof itself is a roof that extends beyond the wall of the house. It extends into the courtyard. V'hamaschela b'soif ha'tikra mishuch la'halin min ha'kais l'soif ha'chotzer. And the gutter itself then, being at the edge of the roof, is quite a distance already from the house wall. Hilkach, ilav mishum zkifa sulam, if not for the latter consideration, lo ha'yatzorch l'esrachik mi roshei ha'tikra. There would be, you could, in theory, you could have constructed the wall in such a way that it comes up right alongside the edge of the roof. And as far as the dafsha consideration, there's still a gap between the wall you just built and the house wall, and people would be able to walk in that area, which if they would look up, they would see the roof of the house that comes over the edge of the house. So there's enough room for dafsha anyway. What this Tanaic source, namely the Mishnah, is talking about is the need for an additional four amos so that you could for the wall to be distanced from the edge of the roof to enable the ladder to be placed up alongside the roof gutter in the event that you need to clear out debris. So let's read that again in the Gemara. We said, "Hocha b'mayaskina b'mazchele mishupas." De'im ishum davshahu. If your concern was, what about the trampling? Hocha silviyasi to say, there's enough room already there under the extended part of the roof in which people could walk and firm up the foundation of the wall that needs to be firmed up. So davsha, in this particular example of the kaisel distance from the maschela, is a non-issue because it's accounted for automatically because of the maschela meshupas. At this point, we turn to the Tosfos on Omid Aleph, Dibor Maschil VeKamo. The Tosfos is relating to the opening question of the Gemara, where on the Tosfos corresponds to the last line of the Gemara. How could the first wall that Mr. B built, how could it have been put up initially so close? That was the Gemara's question, and we spent a lot of time on the Gemara elaborating at the beginning stage of the Gemara before it came to a final understanding that that was never actually the case. But the initial thinking was the kamo hechi somich. How could the first wall have been put up within four amos? Salka daitoch de benofal airi. The initial thinking of the Gemara is that the Mishnah is speaking about a wall that had fallen down. A Mr. B's parallel wall had fallen down. Shekein mashma haloshon. The Kotani, the language of the Mishnah, indicates that Mishahoya Koisloi Somuch Lekoisl Havero. Someone who had, in the past tense, he happened to have had a wall that was next to the neighbor's initial wall. And that initial wall was Somuch. Somuch was, means it was too close. So how could that have been legitimately constructed? Umishani Rabbi Yehuda, Hachi Komar. And Rabbi Yehuda was our first response in our, by way of markings. You notice that he had been highlighted with a bow tie. He said, Mi Shahoya. Let me read that again. Umishani Rav Yehuda, Hachi Komar, Habo Lismoch. One who is coming, Mr. B, who is coming to put up his first wall, not talking about any wall that fell down. Umasnisin hochi pirusha. And as far as getting Rav Yehuda's explanation into the words of the Mishnah, it's as follows. Mi shehoya gvul kaisloi somuch lekaisel chavero. Someone whose wall boundary was near a Mr. A's wall. And that's how Rav Yehuda understands the Mishnah. And as we saw, we were not talking about any walls that fell down, but someone who is coming initially to put up his wall. And once again, as the Mishnah said, Misha Hoya Kislo, it's not referring to a wall, but rather the border of the intended wall that was near the neighbor's, Mr. A's existing wall. So when he wants to build his wall at the outset, make sure it's 4 amas away. The Rava Porech, and we saw this in the Gemara, and Rava had questioned the Kaisel Katani Velo Gvul. The Mishnah refers to a wall that was there, not a Gvul, the border of an intended wall. So if that's the case, then that the Mishnah is in fact referring to a case where there had been a, where Mr. B had a pre-existing wall. The Im Tomar Lerova the Omar Beresh Pirkin de Osir Lismoch. Tosfos asks, according to the opinion of Rava, who appeared at the beginning of our parak in a rather extensive sugya, it was a machlokas Abaye and Rava, is an individual allowed to put something on? There were, I say something because there were a lot of examples. Can you put something right up at the edge of the border between your property and your friend's property? If you recall, we had numerous examples in the opening Mishnah, different heat-producing materials, different issues of dampness, wet-producing entities. And in learning that sukya, Rava said that you cannot put something, if you have something that could potentially cause damage, so you can't put it initially right up there initially on the border. So according to Rava, that says Osir Lismoich, Kamo Heichi Somach. Now if you look in the Maharam, in the Maharam commentary, he has a very elaborate, a very clear explanation of this particular section of the Tosfos. Here the term kamo, heichi somach, is not the same kamo referred to in the Gemara. Here, the focus is on Mr. A. Mr. A, the fellow who put up the initial wall, it seems from our discussion that when Mr. B wants to put up the wall, he has to move into his property the full 4 amos. That would seem to indicate that Mr. A, who put up the first wall, when I say first here, it means the first in the entire scenario, the first wall that was put up right on the border between the two properties. And by doing that, he's forcing Mr. B to move in the full 4 amos. Well, if that's the case, the question is, according to Rava, how could Mr. A have put his wall up right there on the border between the two properties? Ve'afilu l'pirish Rabbeinu Tam, and Tosfos here is making reference to Rabbeinu Tam that we saw back on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, in Tosfos Dibur Maschil Sovar, was a rather long Tosfos. In fact, all three Tosfos on that Amud were really one long Dibur Maschil according to the Bach. 6 lines from the bottom, if you want to look back there to refresh your memory. Even according to Rabbeinu Tam, de la maskona, shori Rava lekulu lismoch levad mibor. Rava, in the final picture, according to Rabbeinu Tam, did not object to putting things up right on the border between two properties, with the exception of the digging of a pit. Namely, in a situation where there's nothing, you have just a flat piece of blank property. There's nothing in the vicinity to be damaged. There's no victim in the vicinity. There's nothing there. So all the items that were featured in the sugi, in the Mishnah, etc., even Rava concedes you can put them right up there on the border, with the exception of digging a pit right up on the border. In that sukkah, before we reach that conclusion, there were a lot of questions that were asked on Rava. Rava had said it's mutter. It says osur lismoch, and we saw a lot of questions asked on that. Mikol mokum amaylo poruch mehacha to have a reisha elo mimasher v'yerek to have a seifa. Why in that Gemara did it not bother asking on Rava from this Mishnah, which is here on Daf Chof Beis, and went to a Mishnah on Daf Chof Hei, that's called the Seifa right now. And relative to this Mishnah, the case of Masher V'Yerek is the Seifa. That's on Daf Chof Hei. Here we're on Daf Chof Beis. Why didn't the Gemara ask on Rava initially from this Mishnah, which, as we just explained, indicates that the very first wall was put up legitimately on the border? That's called lismoch. And Rava says, Rava said, osur lismoch. V'yesh lomar, delo osa Rava lismoch. When Rava appeared in that sugya back on Daf Yud Ches at the beginning of the perek, and he stated his position, it's osur lismoch, you can't put things right up on the border between two people's properties, neighbor number one cannot put up right on the border things, ela milso de migufe osi hezek, things that inherently produce damage. We saw before things that store water, dampness producers or heat producers, avol hocha, hakaisel eno mazik klum. Here, the wall that the first one puts up, here in the case of the wall that's put up, the wall itself doesn't produce damage. El shigurim the ma'ed hadafsha. What happens is that if it's put up too close, it reduces the area for trampling, for walking. In other words, the improper positioning or locationing of the wall doesn't represent a source of inherent damage that emanates from the wall, but rather it creates a potential limitation for dafsha that would ultimately be able to strengthen the wall foundation. So in simple terms, the wall, the mispositioning of the wall is not an inherent source of damage. Let us continue now with the Tosfos at the top of Amud Beis. Dibur HaMaskil Ela. This refers to the Gemara three lines from the top. Elo Omar Rova, Hochi Komar, Misho Yakoislo Vichule. This, of course, referring to Rova's version of how to understand the Mishnah as opposed to that which Rav Yehuda had suggested before. And according to Rova, the Mishnah was in fact addressing the case of a wall that had been there and fallen down. However, in response to the Gemara's opening question, Rava's answer tells us that the initial wall that Mr. B had put into place had been at the legal required distancing of 4 amos. With all of that in mind, Hiksha Rivom, Delomo Le Laminkat Bechi Haigavno, Shahoyo lo kaisel barichuk arba amois venofal. Why is it necessary to present the situation if you're trying to communicate the idea of the necessity of distancing four amas? Why do you have to present that halacha in a case where there had been a wall, albeit at four amas, and falling down? Couldn't all of this be taught in a more direct fashion? Listening, let the Mishnah simply say, Shalo yismoch koisloi, lekoiso chaver elim ken yurchek abamos. Namely, at the beginning of the construction of the wall, do not construct it within four amos. So, why the necessity of the Mishnah describing a case where there had been a wall that fell down, and that first wall was distanced at the proper four amos? Veleka lememar. You'll notice all of this Tosis essentially is the Rivam's question, and it's left with no answer. And he goes on to say that you cannot suggest. Didafka b'chi haygavne shoyerochei kvar arba amos v'hirchi korishon ko'omar delo yismoch, that the din applies only when there had been an original wall that had been properly distanced at four amos, and when it fell down and now you're going to reconstruct it, do not position the reconstructed wall at less than four amos. Do not say that. In Cain, because if you were to suggest that the din of harchok of dalet amos for davsha purposes is only when there had been a wall that fell down and was reconstructed it, and not at and that the law of four amos would not apply at the initial building. Well, if that were the case, my poruch besomuch, then how are you to understand the Gemara that when it asks on the issue on the law of Davsha, it asks a quote from the Gemara, Taimo Shelo Yafil, a reference to the Gemara 16 lines from the top. Or the Gemara that appears 14 lines from the bottom, I Mishum Sulam, Avo Mishum Davshalo. You can see from those examples from which the Gemara is asking on Davsha, it's talking about an initial wall construction. And if, as according to your suggestion here, that maybe the whole din of four amos, i.e. Davsha, is only when there was a wall that had been there fallen down and now you're coming to reconstruct it, these cases are not dealing with a wall that fell down. These are cases dealing with an initial building of the wall. And yet you see that even at the initial building of the wall, the Gemara was medayik that for light purposes or for ladder positioning purposes, you need to have the four amos and not because of dasha. If the suggestion was made here was correct, you would have been able to answer, of course there's no davsha consideration, because here we're dealing with the initial construction of a wall, from the fact that that was not offered as a response. You can see that in the Gemara's mind, even at the point of the initial construction of the wall, the four amma distancing for davsha purposes would have been a necessity. Hence, there was room to ask from those other cases of initial wall building. And with all of this in mind, that brings us full circle around to the original question here. Why does the Mishnah, in order to teach the din of distancing four amas, have to refer to a case of a wall that had been there and fallen down? It could have been taught straight out. When you're building a wall for the first time in the vicinity of a pre-existing wall, you must distance it four amos. And so this is left unanswered. And with that, we continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Avol, This refers to the Gemara, 17 lines from the top. Avol Mishum Dav Shalo. This is a diuk from that which was said in the Mishnah, that from Mikineged the Chaloinos, you must distance a wall from the windows four amas, so that there should be no darkness. Should be no darkness caused by the new wall, but the wall being built. But the dafsha wasn't a consideration. The Gemara had offered, had given an answer there, and said, well, because we're talking about a wall that is bo min hatzad. V'im tomar v'lei modairi b'yir yishona. Why not say that the reason that that only the issue of darkness came up, but dafsha was not a consideration, is because the Mishnah is talking about yir yishona, as is mentioned in the Gemara, 12 lines from the top, that when you're dealing with a city that's been around for a while, an old city, you don't need dafsha. So that could have been a good answer, that we're talking about Ir Yishon, instead of giving the answer that, well, here we're talking about a wall that's bo min hatzad, coming perpendicular to the house. So why not say that? The Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the case of Chalonos that was mentioned in the Mishnah, Debayis have a kegino. A house has the din of a garden. And in the case of a garden, even in Ir Yeshana, you would still need the Davsha. So that to deflect the Davsha issue by simply saying you don't need it because it's Ir Yeshana, that's insufficient. Because we're dealing with a house. The house had windows in it, and you've got to keep your... You've got to understand how the wall that's going to be constructed near the windows has to be positioned. So the Ir Yeshana answer would not have been sufficient. And why is a house like a Gina? And as we said, just to repeat, the Gina was an example of something that even in an Ir Yeshana you still would need to concern yourself with Davsha, if Davsha was a consideration. Why is a house considered like a gina? On the inside of the wall of a house, no one's walking over there per se. The man puts his bed and his other vessels and furniture there, and there is no walking. So that's the reason that in order to answer the question of what about the dafsha, you couldn't have given the answer, well, here we're talking about an Ir Yeshana, therefore that's why there's no dafsha consideration. V'od yesh lomar de bechotzer ika dafsha de rabim. When you're dealing with a courtyard, with a chotzer, there are a lot of people walking there, and therefore in an Ir Yeshana you wouldn't need to have to concern yourself with dafsha, and the only consideration would be the issue of darkness. Ma she'en kein bebayis, as opposed to a chotzer, the same is not applicable to bayis, and therefore, even if you don't consider a bayis like a gina, nevertheless, it's not like a chotzer, it's not like a courtyard. And therefore, even if you were talking about Ir Yeshana, since we're talking about a bias, dafsha still would have been a consideration. Hence, the Gemara's diuk here, that we see from here that from the fact that the Mishnah emphasizes only Shelo Yafil, there shouldn't be darkness, but dafsha doesn't concern us. You could not have deflected the question by simply saying here we're dealing with an Ir Yeshana, because since you're dealing with a house, according to these two approaches that we just saw in the name of the Rabbeinu Tam, the fact that you're dealing with Ir Yeshana would not have been reason to discount the need for dafsha. So you still need dafsha, and yet the Mishnah says that the only consideration is there shouldn't be darkness, hence our question on the dafsha hesber. Ulari nira. Denichale lishnie beir chadasha. Dumya deresha. According to the Ri, it appears that, technically speaking, the Gemara could have deflected the question by simply saying, well, here, in the case of the Chalonos, we're dealing with an Ir Yeshana. The Gemara's actual deflection of the question was the Kaisel was constructed in a perpendicular fashion. The suggestion was, why say perpendicular fashion? Say that we're dealing with a parallel wall, but you're dealing with an Ir Yeshana, and that's why you don't need the Dafsha. According to the Ri, we don't want to say that the Mishnah is dealing with Ir Yeshana. It's more smooth to say that we're in fact dealing with an Ir Chadasha. And in an Ir Chadasha, in a new city, Eino Chinami, Dafsha is still a consideration. And why is it important or more smooth to set up that our mission is talking about Ir Chadasha? Because Dumya Dereisha, the Mishnah of Chalonos is following the Mishnah that spoke about the construction of wall near someone else's wall, and we said at the end of the namely at the bottom of Omid Aleph, we said there you have to distance the parallel wall for Amos for Davsha purposes. Oh, if you're distancing in the Mishnah at the bottom of Omid Aleph for Amos for Davsha purposes, obviously you're dealing with an Ir Chadasha. So just like that Mishnah was dealing with Ir Chadasha, the Hemshich, this Mishnah, the Mishnah that featured the Chalonos, is also talking about an Ir Chadasha. V'cheinahi, and likewise the Mishnah, the next Mishnah, the Marchikinus HaKaisel Min HaMazchela, the need for distancing the wall from the roof gutter, that is also talking about an Ir Chadasha. Afagav the mafsikis beintayim hahi, even though that Mishnah is interrupted by in effect by the case of demarchikim asasulam in ashoivach, which is not related to the issue of davsha, but as we'll see later in the Gemara, it has to do with another form of nezek. Nevertheless, these Mishnayas, the Mishnah at the bottom of Omid Aleph is talking about a case where you need to have dafsha, indicating to us that you're dealing with a new city, with a Ir Chadasha, and likewise the Mishnah of Marchikin Es HaKaisel Min HaMazchela is also dealing with an Ir Chadasha. That's why the Gemara didn't give the answer when the question was raised. What about? So you see, you don't need dafsha, and it didn't simply answer that you're talking about an Ir Yeshana, because coming on the heels of the Mishnah at the bottom of Omid Aleph, where it was clear that we're dealing with an Ir Chadasha, a place where you still need to have dafsha. The subsequent Mishnayos also are cases where you would think you still need dafsha, and hence the Gemara asked, from those cases where the distancing was reported for other reasons other than dafsha, so the Gemara's thinking had been in each one of those questions that from here you see you don't need to have dafsha. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil VeKama. Omar Rav Yeva, and at this point it's worth looking back to the Gemara on Omid Beis, 18 lines from the top. The Gemara, after it had responded to the question of the necessity, the thinking that you don't need to have dafsha, the Gemara said, well, here we're talking about a wall that's being built perpendicular to the house, so that the dafsha consideration doesn't exist in a case like that. At that point, the Gemara said, v'kama. Omer Rav Yeva, Chamu Adashian Bar Nadboch, Mishmei Rav Kemoloi Rochev Chaloin. The distance requirement in the case of the perpendicular wall was the width of a window. Now Tosis points out Vitema. Dehashta boy Vikama. Here, the Gemara seems to be asking, and how much must the distancing be? As if the Gemara doesn't have any idea of how much the distancing must be in the perpendicular wall situation. Obasar hachi parach, and then afterwards the Gemara itself says, well, v'hotnan arba amos, but it says you need four amos. That's a little strange that the Gemara initially appears that it doesn't know how much, and then all of a sudden after the Gemara gave its answer, it then jumps in with a question, but we know that you need to have four amos. So apparently the Gemara knew the required distancing. Why then did the Gemara ask at the beginning how much should the distancing be? V'yesh lomar, the Rav Yeva gufei boy v'kam v'lo Gemara. And hence it's good. It's important to go back to the Gemara text. The Gemara had answered, why is Dafsha not really a consideration over here in the case of the windows? And the Gemara said, we're dealing with a perpendicular window. And when the word Vekama appears, you have to understand it's Rav Yeva speaking. So maybe you would say almost in a rhetorical fashion. Rav Yeva is saying, and how much must the distancing be in the case of a wall coming built perpendicular? So Rav Yeva himself, after asking the question, Rav Yeva provided the answer, Meloi Roichav HaChalon. Oh, now that Rav Yeva stated his piece, the Gemara asks, but didn't we learn four amos? So it's not a situation where the Gemara is presenting itself like playing dumb, so to speak. It doesn't know, and then all of a sudden it knows. It wasn't the Gemara that was asking the question v'kama in the first place. And Tosfos points out uki'inyan zeh yesh be'elim mitzias, and you have a similar Gemara style in the second parak of Bava Metzia, where the one that gives the answer is the one that had asked the question of v'kama. We continue with the next thesis, Dibur Hamaskil B'Madir. We pointed out when we learned the Gemara that there was a Girsa change B'Meradeid. And this had to do with if you're going to say that the wall is the perpendicular wall is kamol roichav chalon, isn't there the fear that the owner of the wall is going to go to the top of the wall and he's going to start peeping into the window? So the Gemara said, well, the top of the wall is constructed in such a way that it tapers to a tip, that's called miradeid or madir, and therefore he's not going to be able to position himself at the top of the wall in order to peep in to begin with. So the Tosfos b'madir, which is referring to the Gemara 18 lines from the bottom, b'madir is koisloi, the lo motzi lishnuye, Tosfos says that the Gemara could not have answered in this case b'magbia koisloi dalet amos, that the perpendicular wall is going to be built four amos above the window. The kevon dekoy min atzad, since you're dealing with a perpendicular wall, the oirech hakoisel rochbo shel chaloin, and if you, of course, use your pirush chai, we've been reminding you of that along the way, the length of the wall is opposite the window width. Since that's the case, even if the wall had been four amos higher than the window, the owner of the wall could have gone to the far end of the wall, and here you'd have to figure some, use some geometry in order to appreciate that if you have a sufficient length of wall, by going to the end of the wall, the far end of the wall, you could at that point bend, get onto this wall, even though it's four amas higher than the window, get up onto the wall at that point, bend over, and still be able to peer into the window. Therefore, the solution, the only solution that remains, is the tapering of the wall up to a, it tapers upwards to a, to an edge, to a narrow edge, where the owner could not get onto the top to begin with. We continue with the Tosfos Dibur Maaseil Veha. This refers to the Gemara 17 lines from the bottom. Vo'anan Tnan Arba Amos, and not the, in the case of the perpendicular wall, four amos is the shiur of distancing from the window, not just rochav chalon. Now, in order for the Gemara to ask this question, you have to assume that it's clear that the Mishnah is dealing with perpendicular walls. Demasnisin airi nami minatzad. The Mishnah with regard to the Mishnah of the windows, the chalonos, in which you saw four amos, is talking about perpendicular wall, and hence you can ask the question: it's four amos, not just rochav chalon. Now, how does Tosfos know that the Mishnah itself is dealing with the Mishnah of involving the chalonos is a Mishnah of a perpendicular walls? Kevan de lo chayish ledafsha elo mishum chalonos. This Tosfos, in my opinion, is very terse, but I looked in the Sefer Tosfos HaMavor, and he explains that since the Mishnah was Mechayev distancing only in a case of a wall with windows in it, it wasn't Mechayev distancing in the case of all walls. So, therefore, it's a Mishnah that's dealing with, it's not dealing with it's therefore dealing with a parallel, a perpendicular wall situation, and hence it's dealing with a case just like the Gemara had answered, perpendicular wall, and therefore how can you say the distancing from the window is only rochav chalon when you see in the Mishnah the distancing in a perpendicular wall situation is four amos? At this point, we turn back to the Mishnah at the lower part of Chof Beis Amid Beis. The Mishnah. Marchikin es asula min ha-shoivach arba amos kedei shelo tikpo itzhanemiyah. If you have a wall, and right up against the wall is a bird coop. That's, we'll say, on one side of the wall is a shovach. And I want to set up a ladder on the other side of the wall. You have to make sure that the ladder that you set up, I would like to suggest that we're talking about a folding ladder. We're not dealing with a ladder that you lean on the wall. And you want to set up a a ladder. A ladder would be look like an inverted V. It's a folding ladder that you open up. You want to make sure that that ladder is not within four amos of the shovach. The shovach being, as I said, on the other side of the wall. Upon a second look at the book of illustrations, the Pirush Chai, he actually illustrates this case of the sulam being positioned not, like I said, distanced from the wall proper, but rather the ladder spoken of here is resting on the top of the wall, but it must be at a distance of four amos away from the shovach that the neighbor has, the bird coop that the neighbor has. And why is this distancing? We'll call this lateral. Lateral is there's a sort of a pun involved over there. Lateral, spelled with a T, in the distancing of the ladder with the double D in it. Why is that necessary? Kidei shelo tikpotz hanemia. We want to avoid a situation where this carnivorous rodent, the nemia, would jump. We want to avoid a case where it would jump from the ladder to the bird coop. The Gemara will focus on this a bit more. The next, what we have quoted earlier, V'es ha'kaisel min ha'maschela, when you want to build a wall near someone's house, so you have to distance the wall from his roof gutter, dalet amos, kidei she'zokef es ha'sulam, so that he... The owner of that house will be able to rest his ladder with the proper angle for a secure ladder placing in order to clean out the debris from that roof gutter. Now, the Gemara. Leimo masnisin delo k'Rav Yosi. Shall we say that our Mishnah that required the distancing of the sulam from the shovach is not in accordance with Rabbi Yossi? Why? The Rabbi Yossi, if our Mishnah were to be authored by Rabbi Yossi, but Ha'omar, but Rabbi Yossi said, Ze choyfer besoch shelo, veze notea besoch shelo. According to Rabbi Yossi, distancing is not necessary. If you want to dig a pit in your property, dig it wherever you want. And the neighbor, if he wants to plant a tree, he can plant a tree wherever he wants. The tree roots are going to eventually damage the pit. But according to Rabbi Yossi, that doesn't present a legal problem. Each one does in his own property whatever he wants to do. And in our Mishnah, we don't have that approach. We say that you have to take into consideration what's going on the other side of the wall in the neighbor's property. The Gemara answers, Afilu Tema Rav Yossi. Our Mishnah can, in fact, be authored by Rav Yossi. In other words, Rav Yossi would accept the restriction taught in the Mishnah. Ho Omar Ravashi. Kiavinon Bey Rav Kahana, when Ravashi tells us that when I was studying in the Yeshiva Rav Kahana, Abba Omar, Rav Kahana used to say, Moidi Rav Yossi Begiri Didei. Rav Yossi admits that this concept of each one does in his own property whatever he wants has a limitation. He concedes that's not the case when it comes to Giri Didei, your shooting of arrows. What does that mean? A person takes his bow and arrow in his own property. Rabbi Yossi concedes he cannot shoot the arrow into the next guy's property and do damage, even though each one is in their own respective properties. When it comes to direct force damage, Rabbi Yossi concedes that one cannot behave thusly. Rashi says, "Begiri dileich bechitz maboyin lo miad gufo shel bala bayis mamish." Arrows that are shot from the person himself into the next person's property. So there, Rabbi Yossi concedes that when it's a direct force damage, you are restricted. And now, with that in mind, Hochinami, we're going to adopt that analysis and superimpose it on our Mishnah. The same thing applies. There's an issue of Giri Didei. The Zinnin, the Bahadi, the Monachle, it could be that when you're placing the ladder down, when you're placing it against the wall, Kafsa, the Nemia, this carnivorous creature, will jump from the ladder that I'm holding. In other words, you have the person's direct force involved. Rashi says, the Bahadi Monachle, Ba'oid Shaychis Besulam. While he is holding the ladder, Kofsa, the Nemia, carnivorous creature, will jump and consume the fowl in the coop. The Gemara asks, but still, Vahal Gromahu, why is there any necessity of distancing? Even if that happens to result, it's not as if I fed his birds to this Nemia. It's Groma. Groma is causative. Rashi comments on the upcoming piece of Gemara, but for the time being, the Gemara is working with the accepted position that when a person is involved with say causative damage, where he's not directly causing the damage, and as the Rabbeinu Gershom says, second line from the bottom, we can read the Rabbeinu Gershom together. V'gromo he de be'oisa gromo shelo kofza. It's through my holding of the ladder. At the time that I'm holding the ladder, the carnivorous creature decides to jump. It's not as if the person did something directly. The lokom machil hayoinim lemiyah. He didn't take the guy, the neighbor's doves, and feed it to the nemiyah. V'hada meider Rabbi Yosi de begiri didei chayev, and that which we mentioned a moment ago, that Rabbi Yosi concedes that when it's your arrows, you're chayev. Hechadovet ihu biodayim. That's where you're doing something, albeit in your own property, but you're doing something proactively. And this is the example that Rabbi Yossi addresses, where you have in the Gemara in Bava Metzia two people, one living upstairs, one living downstairs, and here he doesn't fill you in with the whole Gemara, but there it deals with someone who is pouring water in his upper floor, and there's a hole in the floor, and when he pours the water, it flows directly down to the neighbor below. That's Giri Delay. When the upper guy is washing his hands, the water that I'm pouring over my hands to wash while I'm upstairs, I am pouring the water, and it falls directly onto the lower story. That's direct damage. You don't have here the same level of damage. You have something that's groma, causative. Why should there be the obligation of distancing the ladder? Now the Gemara answers. Omer of Tuvi Bar Matana Zoisei Meris. You see from this, Groma the Nezikin Osir. Even though you're not obligated to financially compensate when the damage transpires, nevertheless you're not allowed to initiate a situation where damage will result. That's the conclusion from this Mishnah. Rav Yosef, Havalei Hano Toli. Rav Yosef owned some young palm trees. Dahavu, we continue to Chof Gimel Omer Aleph. Do, by the way, note that we have a long Maisa marking. This goes till the Mishnah at the upper part of Chof Gimel Omer Aleph. So Rav Yosef had these young palm trees. Dahavu, we continue at the top of Dav Chof Gimel. Asu Umani. Umani are blood letters. Gemara form of doctors. Healing was accomplished through bloodletting. These blood letters came for Yasvi to Sihu and sat underneath the palm trees on their ground. They were not sitting on Rav Yosef's property. However, Rav Yosef had these palm trees that cast shade onto the neighbor's property, under the branches of these trees, these umani sat, and they performed their bloodletting. V'yosu urvi, achli doma, the urvi, a type of bird, often translated as ravens, they came, ate the blood. V'salki v'yasvi betoli, and then they flew up and settled on the palms. These are date palms. Umafsidi tamri, and they ruined the dates. Rav Yosef's dates. Omar lo Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said to them, "Afiku li kurkur mehocha. Get rid of the ravens from here." Omar le Abai va gromahu. How can Rav Yosef have any claim against these blood letters? They didn't cause any direct damage to the dates. They did their service to their patients where they were. As a result, the ravens came and ended up causing ruination of Rav Yosef's dates. But they didn't do any direct damage. Amalei, so Rav Yosef, who was upset, who was claiming get rid of them. Hochi Omar Rav Tuvi Bar Matana Zoyse Meres Groma Ben Azik and Osir. You're in a situation where you're creating damage. You're causing damage to result, and that is a forbidden situation. The Gemara asks, but Vahal Achsik Lahu. They've already been there. They've been there for a while, we'll say, with in a loose translation form. We're going to dwell on this point a little bit later in the Tosfos, but the thinking is right now they've acquired rights to be there. They have a chazoka. Oh, the Gemara responds, you know, if that were be true, so Rav Yosef has no claim. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua, ein chazoka l'nezikin. This idea of gaining rights in a situation where damage results, the concept of chazok, of gaining a right for continuity, doesn't exist. Gemara asks, V'lav itmar Allah Rav Mori Omar B'kutshu Rav Zvid Omar B'veis HaKisei. Was it not qualified? When we say ein chazok in the Nezikin, that is applicable to two specific examples, to a situation involving smoke, or a situation involving a Beis HaKisei. Beis HaKisei is a place where people relieve themselves. Human waste and foul odor. So in cases like that, even if it was going on for a while, the person the neighbor who can't tolerate it, whether it be smoke or it be the Beis HaKisei, can protest, and the claim of the other party claiming I have a chazoka to generate the smoke over here, or I have a chazoka, I have acquired rights for having the Beis HaKisei over here, is not a claim, but the concept of ein chazoka l'nezikin doesn't have any application to blood letters. Amarle, Rav Yosef responds, Hani, Lididi, these orphan birds with the blood, for me, Danino Datoi, I'm a very sensitive individual, picayune, finicky, we'll use the word, very sensitive individual. Kikutra, basically say domuli, they're like smoke or the foul odor emanating from a base akise, and therefore I do have a claim of even though they've been here for a while or they've gained a, so to speak, they want to claim they have a chazoka. Not so, because ein chazoka l'nezikin, and that has applicability in my case. We now turn to the Tosfos, Dibur Masril, Lema. We go back to Chof, the Tosfos that are on Chof Beis Amid Beis, in the middle of the Amid. Of course, in Tosfos markings, using our special Tosfos mark page, Lema Tanan Stama de Loker of Yossi. This is referring to the more 8 lines from the bottom. In our Mishnah, we had seen the necessity of distancing a ladder that you want to rest on a wall, on the other side of which there is a shoivach, so you have to move the ladder away from the shoivach, along the wall, at a distance of 4 amas from the shoivach. The thinking at this point is that there's no issue of giri delay, and as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, he wouldn't require harchoka. Pirush, we say Rabbi Yossi because of his principle of each one does what he wants in each one's respective property. So we said that our Mishnah that insists that you must concern yourself with what is on the other side of the wall and the other guy's property is not like Rabbi Yossi. Pirush Rabbeinu Chananel, midigomar hocha tfei, from the fact that it's stressed over here more than other places, lema delo k'Rabbi Yossi, v'lo komar amishnayis deliel, and this was not said, namely, lema delo k'Rabbi Yossi regarding the Mishnayas, the previous Mishnayas. Mashma, it would seem to indicate then, the kulu asi k'Rabbi Yossi, that all of the previous Mishnayas would conform to Rabbi Yossi. V'havli kulu giri delay. All the other Mishnayas where Rabbi Yossi would have agreed with the dinim in those other Mishnayas must then be cases of giri delay, where Rabbi Yossi concedes that you have to concern yourself. You can't say shoot arrows from your property and damage thereby on the other guy's property. Dimeahi shaita mishtakcha hezeka, that in those other Mishnayas, in the previous Mishnayas, there was an immediate presence of damage. For lo polig Rabbi Yossi elo bi'ilon. And Rabbi Yossi, who says that you don't have to concern yourself, is only in the case of the Elon, the tree and the pit case. That at the time that you're planting the tree, the roots haven't spread yet to damage the pit. So in a case like that, Rabbi Yossi says, Zeh chofer b'soshalo v'zenotei b'soshalo. And we're therefore going to have to explain according to what the Rabbeinu Chananel is saying right now, that all the other Mishnayos, the previous Mishnayos that we've learned, conform to Rabbi Yossi, then Demasnis and Deliel, the Mishnah before that was Mechayev, the distancing of the wall from the neighbor's wall, Nami Giri Delay, that must be a case of giri delay. The miyad kishesemecha kaisel monea hadafshot. That as soon as I would construct the wall if it would be too close, as soon as I start the construction, I'm preventing the strengthening of the foundation. So you have an example of an immediate source of damage. And therefore, the previous Mishnayos don't pose any, we'll say, difficulty or lack of conformity to Reb Yossi's standards. When it came to our Mishnah, before we gave the answer, it seemed that this Mishnah putting the ladder down at a distance from the shelbach, the thinking was there was no immediate damage involved. So over here, the Gemara felt we can ask, this would appear to be not like Reb Yossi. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibur Maschil Kidei, referring to the Gemara, nine lines from the bottom, Kidei Shei Zoykef Es Hasulam. The Mishnah spoke of a drain, a gutter running along the rooftop, and the Mishnah mentioned that if you want to set up you want to build a wall near someone's in the vicinity of someone's gutter, the wall must be four amos away from the gutter. Kedei sheizoykef es hasulam, Tosfos says, kishemochar v'nosan lo zekifas hasulam b'chatzero airi. You have to imagine a case where a person owned a piece of property, and the ownership involved a courtyard and a house, and this house had a gutter running along the roof. The owner of this chotzer sold the house to a buyer. Tosfos is pointing out that when the sale took place, in selling the house, along with the sale of the house, he was also selling him, the house purchaser, the rights for a ladder to be set up along the gutter. And the base of the ladder would be in the courtyard that's owned by the seller. So the seller sold the house with that in mind, that the buyer of the house would have the rights to set up a ladder in the chotzer. The Komash Malon, and the Mishnah reveals to us that in cases like that, when you're selling a house with, we'll call it, ladder rights, the boy, Arba Amos, that you're required to provide for him four amos. And therefore, if you as the chotzer owner want to build a wall, you're going to have to build the wall at a distance of four amos from that gutter. Those four amos were part of the sale of the house, an entitlement to the owner of the house for positioning the ladder. So they said your building of the wall now must preserve the ladder rights that the house purchaser acquired from you. And again, the Mishnah tells us that the ladder rights are four amos. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur Maschil, the Ha. This refers to the Gemara, three lines from the bottom. The Ha Gromahu. Regarding the distancing of the ladder from the Shovach, from the Berku, is it not just a function of Groma? And if that be the case, if it's just an issue of groma, it's not direct damage, why is there any need for distancing the ladder? Why not just put the ladder wherever you want, even if it's right near the bird coop? If damage results, it's something that's what we refer to causative, but not something that I directly caused. Tamo de lo porach achi li'el gabi davsha. Thesis raises just the question of, if you're going to ask, oh, but isn't it groma? Well, couldn't that have been raised as an issue regarding the issue of the parallel wall construction, where a second wall, we said you have to distance it from a pre-existing wall. This question could have been asked over there. Why is there any required to distance the second wall being built parallel? Isn't it if the wall is built too close? So it causes the inability of Davsha to be accomplished. But that's causative. It's not direct damage. And Tosis doesn't answer the question. Is the idea of why wasn't this issue of groma raised earlier in the case of the Mishnah involving the parallel wall construction? We continue with the next Tosis. Dibra Maschil Zos. This refers to the Gemara two lines from the bottom, from the fact that the Mishnah, even though is dealing with a groma situation, nevertheless you must distance the ladder. Zosomer is groma ben azikin oser, that you're not allowed to create a situation where damage could result. Umeikora. The thinking of the Gemara initially when it asked, but isn't it just groma? The thinking had been kihechi de poter hachinami de muter. Just like your poter from needing to compensate if damage does result, you're actually allowed to. That was the thinking of the Gemara. That was the thinking. And then the Gemara responded to that. Ah, you see from here, from the fact that you're not allowed to put the ladder there, not only, or although you're not obligated to compensate, you're nevertheless not allowed to set up such a situation. So the Zosomeris is a response to what the thinking had been up till this point. Just to repeat, the thinking had been, well, since you're exempt from compensating, you would be allowed to set up the situation in the first place. Comes along the Mishnah to tell us, not so. Hocho mashma. Here, with regard to the setting up of the ladder at a distance from the Shovach, Degroma benazikin potter. And the causing damage is exempt from needing to compensate financially when it actually happens. So it's the Tosis is saying here it's mashma that from the Gemara, it said that it's usher to do it, but if damage happens, you are exempt. And we've noted in our marked Tosis in number one, this is in effect the beginning of a very long list of cases that Tosis goes through. We call it extraordinary bekiyas, where Tosis runs through Gemaras all over Shas, where you see other examples of groma benazikin as being exempt. If you look carefully at our marked Tosis, you'll see we have a long bracketed section. The brackets are, there's a starred note that says, Sograim Elu, the brackets that you see here, Vehaboyim Achareim, and the bracketed section that follows, there's a second bracketed section, Mevoidedim shtei rishimois, they isolate two lists. Shel dugmois, shel groma vegarmi, two lists involving one category of damage called Grumma, another category of damage called Garmi. Ubedilu Gum, by skipping these two bracketed sections, Nitan Lirois Tamsis Anoise, you'll be able to see immediately the essence of the topic presented here. Vainu, what's that? Dehacha, here with the regard to the latter and the shovach, the gamba oy dugmois rabos, and similarly in many other examples, mashma the grumma benazik and potter. You get the impression, you get the picture that there is no financial compensation that is made in the case of grumma. V'yesh litein tam ma'ishno kol hani midino de garmi, and one has to explain what's the difference between these cases and the other category that's referred to by garmi with its examples. Now, before we get into the text, take a look at our taktsir slash mivneh. A bow tie marking appears. If you look at your Tosfos itself, you can see two bow ties in the Tosfos. They highlight the terms Grumma and Garmi. Dugmois Shel Hanal, we'll see examples of these. The Chilukim Beinehem, and Tosfos will then give us a distinction between the two categories. Another marking that appears will be a house marking that's found later in the Tosfos, which highlights Rabbeinu Yitzchak and Ritzvah. These Balei Tosfos, Hisbeirim Loma Shafapi Degrama Benazikin Potem Shalem, they will be giving us Hisbeirim why, even though Grumma Benazikin is exempt from paying, Yesh Madomer Shegarmi Chayav, there is an opinion that Garmi nevertheless is Chayav. If I'm not mistaken, it's Shitas the Tana Rebbe Meir that holds thusly. The Gemara asks in Bava Kamma, who is the Manda Omar? Where do we see Rebbe Meir holding that Garmi, Man Didoin Dina de Garmi? Who is the one, namely Rebbe Meir, that obligates compensation in cases of Garmi? So what we're going to now do is turn to the Tosfos text, employ our bracket skipping method in order to get the picture that we presented. So Tosfos, so Yisemer is Gromazikin Osir, we read already, Umeikora Salkadaita Kihechi Depoter Ochinami Demutter Hocho Mashma. We're at the last narrow line. Do you see where the first bow tie appears? Hocho mashma de grumma benazikin de potter. Skip the bracketed section. V'yesh litein tam mai shno kol hani. What is different about all of these? And that kol hani is a reference to all of the examples that appear in the bracketed section. Midina de garmi, from cases that are classified by that term, very similar to the word grumma. You can see one is spelled with an aleph at the end, the other one is spelled with a yud at the end. And what are illustrations of that concept of garmi? That's in the bracketed section. Skip them again initially. The issue then that Tosfos raised was, yesh litein tam mishno kol hani midina de garmi. And at the end of the second bracketed section, v'chilek Rabbeinu Yitzchak, Rabbeinu Yitzchak offers a distinction. Loshen Echad, the Dina de Garmi Chayav. He gives a two-stage explanation, distinctions between the cases of Garmi versus Grumma, and you can see that we've highlighted the two distinctions that he makes using triangles and Roman numerals 1 and 2. The diamond highlights the expression the Dina de Garmi Chayav in both cases. Now, let's go over the Tosfos again. There are, as mentioned, an extensive list of examples. In the context of our Tosfos Marking Shiur, we're not going to go through any thorough presentation or explanations of all of the examples. Mirtzeh Hashem, as one learns through Shas, he'll see each one in their respective locations. What we want to emphasize right now is that they're all, we'll say, indirect forms of damage or causative forms of damage. We mentioned already the requirement of distancing the ladder from the shovach. The Mishnah insists you must keep a distance, and it's we also to put it there. That's it. Also, yes, it's forbidden, but if damage results, you're not chayev to pay. In the brackets, v'chein beperiketz of the regel. Similarly, in the second paragraph of Kama, Zora Kli Moshe Gag, V'yotacht of Korm Ksos, person tossed someone's vessel off the top of a roof. Underneath, on a ground level, there was some cushioning, pillows and cushions. V'kidem v'sukon afilu hu, and someone else, or even the guy that threw off the vessel, after the vessel was in flight, he pulled away the cushioning. Obviously the vessel will smash on the hard ground floor now. Potter, there is exemption. At the time that the vessel was thrown off the roof, the damage would not have happened. The pulling away of the masterage is not direct damage to the vessel. It creates a situation where damage will now result. That's gruma. Beperka pora, hichnis peros chotzubala bayishlo bishus. A person brought his fruits into someone else's property without permission, and the property owner's animal ate the fruits. If the owner of the property, his animal ate those fruits and got sick on those fruits, the owner of the fruits is exempt. It's your animal. Who said your animal has to eat my fruits? It's true I brought them in without permission, but I didn't cause direct damage to your animal. Your animal ate my fruits and got sick. Number four, Venosin Sama Movis Lebemus Chavero, the potter. If I put poison down on the ground and someone else's animal comes and eats the poison and dies, the owner of the poison is not chayef to compensate. Vesholecha Be'era Biad Chereshet Vekotin, someone hands a torch to a deaf mute, an imbecile, or a minor, and they then carry it somewhere and cause damage. I'm not chayev. The owner of the be'ero is not chayev. Uparitz geder b'fei be'emos chavero. I broke a wall. Gemara talks about a loose wall, and someone's animal then went out and got lost or damage happened. The one that broke the wall open is not chayev for the damage that the other guy's animal causes. V'kayfiv komas chaver b'fnei adleka. That involves someone bending over grains in the face of a threatening fire. When the fire consumes the grains, I who bent over the grains am not chayev for their destruction. That has to do with the use of pora aduma water for other purposes. The leave of lipsoy ruach, the potter b'chol hanoch, that's a case where I blow on a fire and the wind also causes the fire to enlarge because of the blowing. He is exempt b'chol hanoch, k'domer perka kunis, as the Gemara in Bava Kama says, all of these are exempt. Umavis chavero, I cause a sudden fright to my friend and he goes deaf. Dahavinami groma kida omar beperek kama de kiddushin, and the Gemara there explains the Yehudavis anafshe, he caused his own fright. I made a sudden noise, but that doesn't mean that the victim had to react with fright. He brought the fright on himself. Well, but ketzer regel, and in ketzer regel in bava kama, the second paragraph bava kama, shisa by kelev shisa by nochosh, I enraged someone's dog, and as a result of of my prompting the dog to bite someone, it went ahead and bit someone. Now, I didn't sink its teeth into someone's arm. I said sick him to the dog or to someone's snake, and they hurt someone. Potter, I'm exempt. Of course, it's not allowed. One's not allowed to do that. But if damage resulted, there's exemption. V'yesh li tein ta maishno kol hani. What is different about all of these, midina de garmi, from cases of damage that we classify by the term garmi, where, as we said, Rabbi Meir, for example, will say that in cases of garmi, one does have to make financial compensation. Kagon. And now, in this bracketed section, there are a number of about six examples of garmi. Kagon. Achvi achvuye de goizel basra. That involves a case where an individual points out to government forces to steal a field. And this guy points out someone else's field. Go take that field. And as a result, the neighbor loses his property because I pointed it out to the king's forces. Umar adina l'shulchani benim sora. I take a coin to a money changer who's an expert in, who knows a thing or two about money, and it turns out he said it's a good coin, and it turns out to be rot, turns out to be useless. So this the shulchani gave a mistaken ruling concerning the value of the coin. And as a result, loss took place. Vinifritza, Omelo Gador, that's another case where a fence between a vineyard and a grain field broke. The owner of the grain field said, build the fence up, and eventually he didn't do so, and the grains became kilayim, hence forbidden. Vidones Adin, the Chayav, the Rabbi Meir, Filu Lo Nosa V'Nosa Biad, where a judge issued a ruling saying that someone is obligated to pay, and it turns out he's not. The judge that issued this erroneous ruling, even if he didn't actually take the payment from the party that the judge ruled is Chayav, even if he didn't actually take the money from him and give it to the other party, he simply ruled thusly. That's an example of garmi. Vaser shtrosu shachavero. If I come along and burn your bills of collection, you have documents entitling you to collect debts, and I came and burnt those shtaros. I burned paper. I didn't burn actual cash. But nevertheless, that's called garmi. Umoichir shtar choy v'chavero v'chazer mochlo. If I sold to someone a bill of collection, that means that A sold to B the right to collect money from C, and then Mr. A, who sold the shtar, he turns around and forgives the debt. That's chozer mochalo, indicating that C is now free from having to pay the debt, even though in the meantime the debt right collection was sold to Mr. B. This mocher shtar causes a loss to Mr. B that bought the shtar, and in those cases we said that the offending party must compensate. What's different about these cases? We listed six cases from the cases before. V'chilek Rabbeinu Yitzchok Loshen Echad, the Dina de Garmi Chayav. One point that is a point of distinction, that we say that Garmi is Chayav. Hainu She'oise Hu Atzmo Hezek L'Momon Chavero. The offending party himself was ruining the next party's item. In the first case we saw, I pointed out the neighbor's field. Or the money changer himself gave an incorrect ruling concerning the coins. Or I burnt his, I directly damaged his document, his shtar. I burnt his shtar. So that's hu atzmo, the offender himself, did the damage to the item. The old chilek, and by the way, that's in contrast to the cases before, where, take for example, the removal of the cushioning that would have protected the vessel upon impact. I removed the cushion. I didn't smash the vessel itself. I removed an external factor. It was my action was on an external factor. I gave, let's say, the torch to the imbecile. The imbecile carried the torch off and burnt someone else's items. I didn't burn the other guy's items. So you notice that there's this distinction exists. Namely, did the offender himself do the damage or not? If the offender himself did the damage, even though the item damaged wasn't something that necessarily had inherent value, but loss resulted, the mand omar, the mand didoy dinagami, will hold the offender obligated to compensate. V'od chilek, the dina degami dechayev, hainu debishas maise, bo hahezek. The other distinction is that in the cases of garmi, at the time the action, the destructive action took place, at that very time, the damage, at the very time the offender acted, the damage resulted. Not so in the cases of groma. If I, let us say, I bent over grains, and when I bent over the grains in the face of an oncoming fire, the grains didn't get burnt as I was bending them over. I bent over the grains, thereby enabling the fire to eventually reach them. So in the cases of groma, where I removed the cushioning factor, as I was, at the point that I removed the cushioning factor, the vessel was in flight. The vessel didn't break at that moment. So you see that you have this time factor distinction as well. In garmi, at the time of the action, the damage results. In the case of groma, not so. V'al hakol, on all of these, meaning on these two distinctions, koshe, a question is raised from the following. Tir es atome, a judge declared tohor, declared undefiled, something that really was defiled, ubalabayas atzmo irvon imperosov, and the owner of the produce that was just ruled upon, the balabayas himself, he mixes the defiled produce with the rest of his produce. And in a case like that, we say that the chacham, the one who issued the incorrect ruling, must compensate. Well, if you take the two points that Rabbeinu Yitzchok made, we used triangles in the last two lines. Notice here we have inverted triangles that point for point show the question raised from this case of Tir Es Hatome. Why in that case of Tir Es Hatome, why is the Chochem Chayev? Why should he be Chayev? If Rabbeinu Yitzchok's distinctions are correct, why is there Chiyuv? Why is there obligation in that case of Tir Es Hatome? Why is compensation made? Am I Chayev? The Chacham didn't ruin the other guy's produce. You have this hu atzmo factor is lacking, and yet we see that the chacham is chayav. The gam, the same regarding the second point as well. But at the time that the chacham ruled that the produce was not defiled, when in fact it was, eino bo hahezek. That's not when the damage results. The damage results when the owner of the produce, after hearing the ruling, he takes the produce that in fact is defiled and mixes it with the rest of his produce, thereby ruining all of his produce. But so you see that even when you don't have the immediacy factor, there still is chiyuv. V'nira l'ritzbo. The dina de garmi have mitam knas. The obligation to compensate in cases of garmi is in effect a knasa, sometimes translated as a fine. It's an obligation that's not a reflection of something that's letter of the law, but it's an enactment. Kinemuchim Yushalmi. As is proven there in the Yerushalmi, l'kach kol hezek hamotzui v'rogil lavo konsu chachomim. And therefore, in all cases of damage that's common and regular, the chachomim made this enactment. V'tam the konsu, and the reason for their making such an enactment, shloye kol echod hoylech umazik l'chavero bein. So that... knas will deter people from going ahead and causing direct damage to other people's items. V'hainu taimo demand mechayev behezek shenu nikar. And likewise, this reasoning, this explanation, applies to cases of hezek shenu nikar. Those are cases of damage where the damage is not recognizable. For example, if I defile someone's produce, I ruin their produce through the defilement, but the produce hasn't been altered in any way, shape, or form. It looks the same as before. That's a case of hezek shenu nikar, and by letter of the law, hezek shenu nikar is not true damage, and yet one is obligated to compensate, and that's a function of knas. The efshir de b'shogeg nami konis Rabbi Meir ki hechid de konis b'metam edamea echot shogeg ve'echot meizid. And it's quite possible that even in unintentional situations, Rabbi Meir will impose a knas, just like he does so in these cases mitame. We mentioned that a moment ago. These are examples of hezek shenu nikar. I defile someone's produce, or midamea, that's dimua, that's I mix someone's truma with chulin. If there's an insufficient amount of chulin to void the truma, the mixture becomes forbidden, other than to kohanim. And we say in those cases, whether it's shogeg, and certainly if it's done b'mezid, meaning whether it's done unintentionally, and whether it's done intentionally, compensation must be made. So you see from there that even when the damage is shogeg, payment is imposed. We continue with the Tosis on the top of Chof Gimel Omer Aleph. Dibur HaMaschil. Also umni the yasvi to sayu. This is thesis that refers to the Gemara at the top line. We saw in the story involving Rav Yosef had date palms under which these blood letters sat, and the Gemara said the blood letters sat under them. However, bekarka shelahen hoyu yoshvin velo bekarka shel Rav Yosef. They were sitting on ground that was theirs, not on Rabbi Yosef's grounds. Midaporach boser hachi, from the fact that you can see this from the fact that the Gemara asks four lines from the top, Why? How does Rav Yosef have a right to eliminate them or remove them? V'ha grumahu. It's merely a case of grumma. Now, the Gemara would not have said that had these umnin been sitting on Rav Yosef's property. So you see from the fact that the Gemara asked v'ha grumahu, that they were seated on their own property. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur Maslo V'ha. We continue with the Tosfos, Dibur Maslo V'ha Achziku Lehu. This is connected to the Gemara six lines from the top. In the incident involving Rav Yosef and his interest in dismissing the blood letters, the Gemara asked, how can he remove them? How can he expect their removal? Do they not have a chazokah? Do they not have rights to be there? Pirush Re Bar Mordechai. The Re Bar Mordechai addresses an issue that we featured in our taksir, our comment on the side, the summation of the topic of the Tosfos, and it deals with Chazoka L'Tashmish, the rights for use of something. Haim Ze Mo'il Afilu B'li Taina. Does the fact that someone has been using something enable him to claim rights to continue using it, even if he does not claim that he purchased it, that he purchased those rights? The mere fact that he has been using it, is that enough to grant him continued use rights? So the Re Bar Mordechai says, Kevon shelo bo lahachzik bekakas shel chavero velomar shelohu elo letashmish bi'alma shenehene mimeno. Since they came to the ground, the property on which they were sitting, or someone comes to use property, and he is there not for the purpose of claiming ownership of it, but with the claim that he has use rights. Mo'eles chazoka shelo b'taino. The fact that he has been using it enables him to gain this right even without the taina, the claim that he had bought it, that he had bought those rights. The mistama lo hayu omrim shemochlem Rav Yosef tashmish ze. It's most likely that in the case of the blood letters, they were not saying that Rav Yosef had sold to them the rights to be there. V'havu ki hano d'liel, and they come out. It turns out then that they are like that which was discussed earlier in the Masechta Davo Vomer Aleph. The achzik lehurdi, if someone had been using someone's wall for leaning his hurdi. Hurdi are, we'll say, lightweight beams. The mo'ela es chazoka shelo b'taina. The continued use is their right, even without the claim. From the fact that they were leaning their hurdi, their beams on the neighbor's wall for 3 years, and he did not protest, the owner of the wall did not protest, that's indicative of that wall owner's having been moichel, forgiving any further claims against their continued use. So the Re Bar Mordechai up till this point has said that when it comes to a chazoka litashmish, the rights for continued use, by the fact that they have been using it, is enough to impart to them the continued rights of use, even without their claiming that they had bought or paid for those rights. The Ein Nira. Tosfos, though, does not agree with the Riba Mordechai. Dimlo hikna loy, if the use rights were not formally transferred, formally granted through a kinyan. Ki hichsik lehurdi, amai hichsik lekshuri. By the fact that, in the case back on Davov, that they were using the wall for leaning upon it lightweight beams, why would it be that they have a right to lean on the wall even heavy beams? And yet, it was taught in the Gemara that hirsik lehurdi, hirsik lekshuri. El al korchach hasam shetoyen sheiknalo. Rather, you have to come to the conclusion that the one who was using the wall for leaning the beams was also claiming that he had acquired it through a kinyan. Ulahachi achsik lekshuri. And therefore, he is able to use the neighbor's wall for leaning upon it his heavy beams. De'ein adam oisik kinyan lemechza. A person would not make a kinyan that's only partial. In other words, once I know that hirsik lehurdi, hirsik lekshuri, that is indicative of the fact that a kinyan must have been transpired. The Bach adds in Ois Tes v'hochanami. Here too, the Gemara is speaking that they, these bloodletters, had claimed that Rav Yosef had been makne to them the rights to be there, and that then becomes a chazaka, the assumed status and their use with a taina, with a claim that they had bought it. This issue is a major issue when learning the sugyas in the third perek that also deal with the topic of chazaka, that the mere claim that I have been here and no one said anything, that's not enough through which to acquire rights or to acquire ownership. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibur Maschil Ein. This relates to the Gemara seven lines from the top. Ein Chazaka L'Nezikin. This was Rav Yosef's response to the claim that, well, they have a Chazaka. They have achieved a chazaka, and hence you can't expect them to be removed. Rav Yosef said back, the concept of chazaka doesn't apply when it comes to something that is of a damaging nature. Omer Rabbeinu Tam, v'afilu hikna lo bi'edim yochol lachzer boi, the kinyan b'toizu. Even if, in this case, Rav Yosef had transacted or made a kinyan in the presence of witnesses, he could back out because the whole transaction, the whole kinyan, was on a mistaken basis. The savor hoya sheyochol lekabel v'achshav vein yochol lekabel. He thought, Rav Yosef thought he would be able to coexist, to manage with the situation, and it's now obvious to him, it's now clear to him that he can't tolerate it. He thought he was able to, he thought he would be able to manage, and it turns out otherwise. That's what Tosfos calls a kinyan b'tois. V'ein nira. However, the Tosfos itself, the Bali Tosfos, reject Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam claimed that the concept of Ein Chazaka Lezikin can be, we'll say, applies even if the initial kinyan was in the presence of witnesses. V'einira mi dekaomar Ein Chazaka Lezikin, from the fact that the expression of the Gemara was there's no chazaka for use rights in the face of something that is of a damaging, injurious nature. Ika lemedak, there is room to infer, however, ha raya yesh ki de daikinon becheskes avatim gabi ha disnan velo leish chazaka benichse ishto. The term ein chazaka lezikin leaves room for inferring that if you can bring a proof, and in this case would be witnesses could testify that they saw the transaction of, or the kinyan that enables the use to take place, that would enable the beneficiary to continue the use. So that, albeit chazoka, we could say ein chazoka nezikin, meaning continued use of something, even with the claim I had bought it, that might not be sufficient for continued use in the face of something that's injurious. However, if someone can bring proof that they acquired the rights to use it, that would enable them to continue using it. And Tosfos points out that that conclusion is the result of an inference drawn from the Mishnah that says that a man does not have a chazoka, doesn't gain a chazoka, a proof of ownership when it comes to property that belonged to his wife. So chazoka, no, but if the man, if a husband can claim that his wife sold him the property, he can bring witnesses to that effect, then even though it's his wife's, was initially his wife's property, the husband becomes full owner because he brings proof in the form of, we'll say, witnesses. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibor Hamaschil Bekutra. This refers to the Gemara 8 lines from the top, when Rav Yosef had tried to defend his position and attempt to remove the blood letters with the claim Ein Chazok Zikin, the Gemara had responded that is applicable to injury or discomfort or nezek that happens as a result of kutra, smoke. Nira Leri, the dafka bekutra de kivshon. When we say ein chazok nezikin, that if someone had been, let us say, using a had rights or had been producing smoke next to an individual near a neighbor, the cessation of that smoke production can be imposed if you're dealing with kutra dikivshan, that's smoke coming from a furnace, from a very intense oven. Shehu godol umazik biyoser, it's a lot. There's a lot of smoke that comes from that and is quite damaging. Ein chazaka, then we would say that the enjoyed use till now does not establish the right to continue. Kidoma bimruba, as it says in the seventh parak of Bava Kama, Ein oisin kivshenus b'shalayim. One of the takonis that involve Jerusalem is the prohibition of setting up furnaces in Jerusalem. Maitam mishum kutra, because of their smoke. So we see from that the smoke that comes from a kivshon is the type of smoke that is the subject of this principle of Ein Chazaka L'Nezikin. And the other example that was cited in the Gemara of Ein Chazaka L'Nezikin involved the Beis HaKisei. V'dafka Nami Beis HaKisei Shelahen Shehoyu Lamalo Minakarka. The Beis HaKiseh, the area designated for human waste, waste removal, person relieving himself. And we say that Ein Chazoko Zikin is a reference to Beis HaKiseh. That's their kind of Beis HaKiseh. In the time of the Gemara, the Beis HaKiseh was something that was above ground. It was exposed. And that produced a great amount of foulness. That's Boya Masrich B'Yoser. Avo Bishalon Shum Mechuseh. But our Beis HaKiseh, which is covered, it's often, as far as the Tosis is concerned, it was a pit dug into the ground and covered. Yesh Chazaka. So if someone had been using a particular area for a Beis HaKiseh under these circumstances, and he has been using it for a while, he can continue using it, and the counterclaim of Ein Chazaka L'Nezikin would not apply. We continue with the next Tosfos. Dibur Hamaskil Lididi. Rav Yosef, after hearing that the idea of Ein Chazok Zikin applies to two limited cases, Kutra and Beis HaKiseh, he responded by saying that to me, and this is found in the Gemara, nine lines from the top, L'didi danino datoi, for me, that I am particular, I am sensitive, pirushoya istinis. Rav Yosef was an istinis. And this is an expression referring to someone that is exceptionally sensitive. Kinamrinon barvei psochim, the Gemara in the end of Masech of Psochim says, shlosh chayim ein al chayim, there are three, whose life isn't really life. People who are alive, but they're not considered really living. Who are they? Horachmonim, Varaschonim, Vanine Hadas. People that are prone to fits of wrath. That's the Raschonim, the Rachmonim, people that are extremely merciful in the face of a world where there's a lot of evil. Those who have that characteristic, exceptional mercifulness, have a very difficult time living, and the Anine Hadas, the sensitive type people. Every speck of filth irritates them and creates all kinds of either physiological or psychological reactions. It's very difficult to live like that. Hence, they're called Chayeyam Einam Chayim. Omer Rav Yosef, and here is the main point. Rav Yosef, who is the subject of our sukya, he says, V'kulhu isnu bi'ai, suffer from all three. Meaning, I have all three characteristics, and I therefore suffer all the more so. Triple fold. And that having been said, so Rav Yosef, we see from Masechet Psachim that he was this, Anina Datoi, as he said here in the Gemara. He's exceptionally sensitive. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil, Kikutra. Kikutra Ubeis HaKiseh Domu. The bloodletter story, as far as Rav Yosef himself was concerned, was as upsetting as smoke and Beis HaKiseh. So what was bothering Rav Yosef? It would seem to be the blood that was ruining his dates. The hadikomar afiku kurkur mehacha mashma de mishum orvim hoya oimer. In the Gemara, what did Rav Yosef say to the bloodletters? He said, get rid of these birds. The kurkur is a word that's what we'll call it. I think we would refer to it as an onomatopoeia. The sound of it is reflective of what it is. It's the sound made by these birds. And hence he used that word to refer to the Orvin. As we indicated in the Gemara, sometimes that's translated as ravens. They make a certain kind of crowing sound that sounds like the word kurkur. Well, what was Rav Yosef saying? He was saying, get rid of the kurkur, get rid of the birds. That would indicate that the Orvim is what he was interested in getting rid of, and not the blood. So the Tosis explains, there's two approaches to this. If the assumption is that the blood was ruining his dates, and that is what was irritating him, why was he saying get rid of the birds? So Tosis says, number one, Vadai im lo hoyu orvim, if the birds had not been part of the scene, hoya soivel afagav de anino daite, he would have been able to tolerate, to bear the presence of the blood on the ground, where they were, the bloodletters were working under his trees, blood fell from the patients onto the ground, and that is something that Rav Yosef, even though he was sensitive, he would have been able to deal with that. What ultimately upset Rav Yosef was the presence of the blood on his dates. So what enabled the blood to get to the dates were the birds. If the birds were not there, so it's true there would have been blood in the vicinity, but that wouldn't have upset Rav Yosef to the extent that he issues a claim and an order for their removal. Inami, another approach is Ha'orvim Hayu Oichlim Hadam Uporchen Umekanchim Beperos. The birds that he said get rid of them, the birds would eat the blood, fly up, nest and fly up and rest upon the tree, the date palms with the dates, and in doing so they would wipe themselves on the fruits. According to this approach of Tosfos, we would say that without the birds, the blood would have not been a source of trouble whatsoever. According to this approach, he wouldn't have been described as someone who had been soivel, bear the problem of the blood. The blood, according to this approach, doesn't present itself as a problem at all. Whereas, and according to approach number one, had there been no birds, the blood was a type of problem, but he would have been able to bear it. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.